Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, November 25th, 2018. This is episode 1,544. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by JW Player, helping businesses, including TWiT, make money on their video. To make more while saving 50% off your Platinum subscription, visit jwplayer.com/TWiT and use the code TWiT at checkout. And by SimpliSafe. Protect your home and family with an A-plus home security system. Visit simplisafe.com/TWiT and save 25% off your SimpliSafe system. And by OnDeck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, OnDeck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, OnDeck is a lender you can trust. Visit ondeck.com/techguy to learn more and receive a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. Well, hey. How are you doing? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got smartphones. We got smartwatches. We got technology of all kinds, all shapes, all sizes. And if you want to talk tech with me, I'd love to talk tech with you. All you have to do is dial 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. And that's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. We could talk about Black Friday deals. You know what the best Black Friday deal is right now, I think? Depends, I guess, on what you're looking for. But if you looked covetously at the Samsung Galaxy Note 9 when it came out a few months ago, it's the most recent Galaxy phone, and said, boy, I wish I could afford that because it's, man, that's expensive. It's over $1,000. It is down now to ridiculous. I think less than $700. They're discounting it deeply all over, and I bet you can get it even cheaper if you agree to, you know, become a customer of some phone company for some years. That may be one of the best deals I've seen Black Friday. What is the best deal you've seen? 888 Ask Leo. Share it with the world once you get yours. You know, don't create a stampede before you get yours. If you're not in the U.S. or Canada, you can still reach us toll-free. It's just you'll have to use Skype or something like that to call that number, but it should still be free for you. There is a website where we'll put everything we talk about today, so you don't have to write anything down as you're driving around. TechGuyLabs.com. Somebody's saying the S9 Plus is $400 off. That's even a better deal if you don't need a pen. The S9 Plus is a fabulous phone. TechGuyLabs.com. We'll put all that that stuff up there. And let's see what's going on in the world of tech. Logitech. Looks like they're about to buy Plantronics. Logitech's an interesting company. They started many years ago in Switzerland making mice. Now, that you may say, well, yeah, but that, you know, that's a good business. Well, it wasn't when they started. They started making mice before mice were kind of commonplace. In fact, as I remember, and I'm going to have to check this on Wikipedia, but as I remember, it was founded, at least in part, by a guy named Niklaus Wirth, who was a computer scientist. He created Pascal as a training language. And
I'm not sure.
I'm not talking to you. Did I say the word echo? Or?
Sorry, I thought I heard my name.
No, I didn't say your name. I'm not talking to you. She's thinking. In 1981, let's see. Oh, no, maybe I'm wrong. I thought it was founded by Niklaus Wirth. He had to make mice for his early Pascal programming environment. 81. The IBM PC came out in 81. Did not notably come out with a mouse. It didn't have a graphic user interface. The Mac didn't come out for 3 years. So what were they making? they eventually, they built quite a business. They announced in 2008 they had made 1 billion mice. 1 billion mice. Then they started on an acquisition spree. They bought a lot of stuff, including speakers, microphones. They bought Blue Microphones earlier this year. And now they want to buy Plantronics for a fairly substantial amount of money, $2.2 billion. Apple, I should point out, spent more than that, $3 billion for Beats, and all they got was headphones. So maybe that's not, maybe that's a deal. Maybe $2.2 billion is a deal. Maybe that's a good price. That's their Black Friday purchase of the year. There should be a Black Friday for buying, or Cyber Monday, I guess, is tomorrow, right? For buying tech companies. Now $50, 50% off. Come on and get it. NVIDIA. Cheap. Maybe not. Maybe that's not going to happen. Let's see. I got my Facebook portal. You've seen the ads now. Boy, they're advertising like crazy on the NFL and lots of prestigious places. That's the thing. I guess we can call it a video phone that harkens back to the 60s, to the World's Fair in 1964 when AT&T showed off its video phone, or maybe to a few years later, 2001. Remember the video phone he called from called home from the moon? Ooh, that's the future. Then they actually invented video phones. They've been around for a decade, and nobody wanted to use them. It turns out people... People really didn't want to see other people, and they certainly didn't want to have to put on, you know, a tie and makeup to make a phone call. My mom's cute. She's 85. I say, you want to FaceTime? She says, give me 10 minutes to put on my face. Mom, you don't have to put on your face for me. It's okay. She likes to, you know, brush her hair. And so you understand why people didn't really take to video phone calls at first, except that in business they started to more and more in video conferencing. Skype kind of became commonplace. I remember, it must have been almost 10 years ago. My daughter was in France for a year in high school. We Skyped her every week or, you know, even more often. I'm sorry to say she probably hated it, but I Skyped her quite a bit. And I have, by the way, don't tell her this, but I saved all those calls. So I have video of her in high school. That's kind of fun. Yeah, that must have been 10 years ago. And still, I think people kind of resisted it. Google has Duo. Apple has FaceTime. Now Facebook has a device you put in your home. They're not the only ones. Google's got, Google's doesn't have a camera, does it? So Amazon has one, the Echo Show. No, Google's not done with the camera. Facebook now, this Facebook portal, there's two prices. For $300, you get a 10-inch screen. For $200, you get a 10-inch screen. For $300, they're on sale right now. Black Friday deal. I bet they'll be on sale even deeper discounts in time to come. You can get a 15-inch screen. It's big. It's like a laptop. And it's on a pedestal, and it rotates. So it's when it's in landscape mode, it will do slideshow of your pictures from Facebook. And when you rotate it in portrait mode, it'll you make calls. And actually, it's a good mode for calls, but it turns out. You're calling people on their Facebook Messenger, or if they have a portal, you can call their portal. Can't call anything else. It's got a microphone. It's got a high-def 4K camera in it. And they use that to do a little trick. When you move around, the camera zooms in on you because it's so high def, it can zoom in like four times or move around, follow you around the room. And people thought, oh, that's kind of creepy. Facebook makes a device with a camera that follows you around. But you know what? That's not the creepy part. The creepy part is the reason it can follow you around, it's not moving. It's a fixed camera. The reason it can follow you around is because it's a very good, high quality, high resolution camera that can see everything. They don't need to follow you around. What do you think? I think people think this. I don't know if I believe it, that companies like Amazon and Google are listening in on their voice assistant somehow devices to sell you ads, and that maybe Facebook would use this camera to look and see what books you have, what clothes you wear, what food you cook, and use that to kind of sell you stuff. I don't know. I don't think they would. I mean, they would like to. It's not that they wouldn't. No, I take that back. They would. But if they got caught, man, that's it. It'd be over for them, right? You're doing what? You're spying on me through that camera? Mm-mm. Would you buy a Facebook portal? Would you put a camera from Facebook in your home? I have to say, now if I tell you, the experience is phenomenal. It's a great camera, great sound, great microphone. You could put funny faces on and read stories to the kids. I mean, it's really kind of, it actually is a pretty good device. It's just that it comes, if it came from Plantronics, if it came from Logitech, oh, it'd be great. It comes from Facebook, and I think that makes me worries people a little bit. Would you buy one? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the weekend number. I am here to answer your call. Actually, the phone angel, Kim Schaffer, is here to answer your calls, and she'll do that in just a moment. Stay here. Do you love her madly? Yes, I do, because she's Kim Schaffer, the phone angel. Hello, Kim, your song. I have a feeling Big Pee Wee going to be playing stuff just for you every week now.
I like that.
Isn't that nice?
Hey, Big Pee Wee.
We'll find your theme song one day.
Yeah. I get a new theme song every week, though.
You should get one every show, twice a week. Kim is answering the phones, taking your calls. She's been in here slaving over a hot phone since early morning.
I have.
And she has for us...
Callers! I actually have a holdover from yesterday that got cut off, so I told him
I'd give
him a call back. And so we've got Charles in L.A., and he's looking for an alternative to TV for his bedridden wife and is wondering if a tablet might do.
Okay.
Line two.
Thank you, Ms. Schaffer, the phone angel. And hello to Charles, who has been on hold since yesterday. Sorry about that.
Well, it's a pleasure speaking with you, Leo.
Thanks, Charles.
And thank you for holding me over for that length of time.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get to you yesterday, but I'm glad you could get back in today.
Well, anyway, what I'm looking for for my wife, she's recently back from a 7-month stay in an acute hospital.
Oh.
All right. And we live in an apartment, just to give you a little background. And instead of trying to hang a TV or something and have a phone and 3 or 4 devices, I thought, well, what's your thoughts on something like a iPad or something like that, where I can still have internet for her? I can still have a way to get TVs, movies, things of that nature to move around. Or if you have any other suggestions, I would love to hear them.
I have many. So my wife and I have decided, and I think a wise move, not to put a TV in the bedroom. Because, you know, we want to make the TV be out in the living room. But there are times, you're right, you want to lie in, you're tired. You want to watch something and you're tired. So I think an iPad is a perfect choice. Now, I think for long-term use, we just prop it up on a pillow, which is not great. But I have to say, if the iPad is fairly close, you know, within a couple of feet of you, it's as big as a TV, you know, a big screen TV across the room. The sound on the iPad is great. The new iPads don't have headphone jacks, which is a little bit of a liability, although you can easily get headphones that work with it. You can get a dongle so you could charge it and have a headphone. But honestly, if you don't mind the speaker... the speakers on the iPad are fantastic. That's what we do. That way we can both watch and listen. And we've watched a number of shows that way, or movies, and it's really great. It's a beautiful screen. You could put Netflix on it, Amazon movies on it, iTunes, Google Play. So every source of video entertainment's available. It's also, I think, a great device for somebody who's bedridden, because I could do crosswords on it. It's a great crossword puzzle machine. I could play games. I don't know if she likes Candy Crush or games like that, but I think it's the ultimate entertainment device. So I think an iPad is a great choice. And I would suggest, and we have one of these, although we don't use it in the bedroom, but I think for somebody who's going to spend a lot of time there, a stand, the floor stand that has an arm that puts the iPad wherever she wants it, and then if she doesn't want it, she pushes it away. And that would be perfect. Now, you can get the older iPads. In fact, they're on sale during, you know, the holiday season for about $300. They're not older. They're the least expensive base model iPads for $300. Those do have a headphone jack. And as you go up, the sound quality and the screen will get a little bit better, the speed a little faster, but the price also goes up dramatically. So it's kind of up to you how much you want to spend on that one. We've been using the new iPad Pro 12.9-inch, and that's what I would at least look at. The 12.9-inch is bigger. It's the biggest iPad they make, and as a result, it's really a nice little TV device. It's just not cheap. I think it starts at $700. I'm going to look for it. I can't remember the brand name of the table or the floor stand that we use. We've used a number of them for broadcast purposes. But if you search for iPad floor stands, there are quite a few of these. Amazon sells them. They have a variety of different kinds of arms. Here's one from Levo that's on wheels. You could roll in and out. I think that's a great idea.
Well, what I'm trying to do, Leo, is to make sure if she can't really get up, if she's in bed, whether she's on the right side of the bed or left side of the bed or center, she can go ahead and basically have a full screen in front of her.
Yeah. I mean, it's not giant.
It's not perfect.
But I think the iPad 12.9-inch is really a good choice. A laptop would also work, but it's a little heavier. It's got a keyboard. Sounds like maybe a keyboard isn't the right thing for her. The iPad has an on-screen keyboard, so if you wanted to do a crossword puzzle, for instance, a keyboard would pop up. You could swing it in and swing it out. You can move it anywhere, a position anywhere in the bed. I think that's a great idea. I'll put a link in the show notes to this Levo stand. It's a little industrial looking, but I think it would do the job. And then there's many more if you search on Amazon.
Well, one of the other points is Helene happens to have Parkinson's. So having it on the screen and a bigger screen that she can leave with her works.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's perfect. Yeah. Oh, you're such a good husband. I'll tell you what, if I were in the hospital or if I were bedridden, I'd want an iPad right in front of me. There is so much you can do with an iPad, and it's a great way for her also to stay in touch. And we were talking earlier about video calls. You can use it for video calls as well, so people could visit her, and it would be like they're really visiting her in person. My mom's way across the country in Rhode Island, and during the lead up to Thanksgiving, I missed her so much. I put her on the iPad, propped it up in the kitchen while I was cooking Thanksgiving dinner, and we visited for a couple of hours. And it was just like she was there. It was really fun. So I think for all those reasons, this would be you're very thoughtful, and I think this would be a very good choice.
Well, I'm trying to have something that will accommodate a multitude of sins, so to speak.
Yeah, you're a good husband. I think this is a very sweet thing to do. I think she'd very much appreciate it.
Well, I will ask you, by chance you wouldn't happen to know of a site that might be better as far as pricing?
Yeah, unfortunately, Apple keeps a tight lid on all of this. I think the best, if you wanted to get one of the newer iPads, the iPad Pro, the only discount I've seen is at B&H Photo, bandhphoto.com, and I think they're doing $50 off. The base model iPad Pro, the bottom of the line, would be just fine. You don't need to upgrade it for more storage. But it is pricey. It's, I think, $800. And then you're probably going to want to get that stand for another $80, $100. I think that's worth it, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by those good folks at JW Player. If you're watching the show on twit.tv right now, you're watching with JW Player. It's a great player, but it's more than just a better player. It's, with your branding on it, so you don't have YouTube on it. It's also a better way to make money, a lot better way to make money on your videos. JW Player has been helping businesses, including us, make money on their video for a long, long time. I think so many companies start by putting YouTube video, embedding YouTube video on their website. I guess that's okay. But A, Google's keeping most of the revenue from it, the ad revenue. B, it's a big ad for YouTube on your site. And the thing that really bugs me the most is when your video stops playing, YouTube recommends other videos on other sites. I don't want to see that. Maximize your reach and revenue with a player that is branded to look like your player, JW Player. Washington Post does this. Business Insider, Vice. More than 500,000 websites use JW Player to deliver video. Also, another thing here, and this is really important, JW Player starts fast and doesn't buffer. And we know, and JW Player knows, I was talking to Jaron from JW Player, he told me this, viewers, when they get to your page and they start a video, if it doesn't start, within 5 seconds, half of your viewers are gone. They're just gone after 5 seconds. Ain't nobody got time to wait for a video to buffer or start. So JW Player doesn't do either. You're using the JW Player CMS for uploading and managing your videos. It's fast. You'll get real-time video analytics so you can see exactly how your content's performing. It's the number one video player in the world for good reason. It's what we use. By the way, right now you can go to jwplayer.com/twit and get a free copy of an ebook about advertising that I found really helpful. It's The Modern Publisher's Guide to Video Advertising. Let's start using a video player that makes you money, not Google. jwplayer.com/twit. And by the way, if you use the code TWIT at checkout, you're going to get 50% off your Platinum subscription. 50% off. Now, this is a limited time exclusive offer for you because you're watching the TWIT stream. So be sure to check it out today. jwplayer.com/twit. And use the code TWIT at checkout. We love JW Player. We've tried a lot of different players, and nothing works better for us than JW Player. And I know you'll feel the same way. And if you're trying to monetize your video, this is easily the best way to do it. jwplayer.com/twit. 50% off your Platinum subscription right now when you use the offer code TWIT at checkout. Listen, he's been to every land, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and with us, Johnny Jett. You, where are you today?
I am in Fort Lauderdale on the brand new Celebrity Edge ship, which is going to be doing Eastern and Western Caribbean 7-day voyages.
This ship is launching next week, but they brought Travel Press on to tour it and to sail one day on it?
Yes, 2 days.
2 days. This is abuse. Now, Celebrity is a nice cruise line. I've hear very good things about them. And this is the newest ship out there. Cruising seems like cruising's starting to take off in a big way.
Oh, I mean, it started taking off when the Love Boat came out.
That's true.
You know, that was probably the most brilliant thing the cruise industry ever did.
I think they're building more new ships now than ever before.
Oh, it's unbelievable. We just drove through the port here, and there are so many mega ships. And this one holds 2,918 guests. But we went by ones that hold 5,500.
Yeah.
And, you know, this ship looks like a small ship compared to it.
I know.
And it's not a small ship.
It's very luxurious.
But what's unique about this ship is it has a magic carpet, which goes up and down. It scales the exterior of the ship. And every day will be a different experience. And you're looking at it right now.
I'm looking at the video. So it's kind of hard to describe. It's like an outside, I want to say elevator, but it's not. It's like a bar or I guess you could turn it into a restaurant. And it goes up and down on the ship?
It does, but not when people are on it. They don't do it when the people are on it.
Well, that's probably good.
So everyone comes.
Because it's not closed in. No. It's open.
It's open, yeah. I just took a quick tour of it, and that's how
that's so cool.
The person working there said, yeah, people don't go on
it. It's also got a rooftop
garden.
The
design is really classy. You know, I haven't even gone to the rooftop. The guy said that's the best part.
It looks gorgeous.
I'm going to go right after. I just got on. I just boarded a couple hours ago, and I went across straight to the buffet, and I'm now about to take a power nap.
Do you have a good job. I'm telling you. What is that weird, that thing on the pool? They've got this big light show going on in the pool. That's kind of cool.
No, I haven't even seen it yet. I haven't gone up to the top.
Oh, and they have an app. Oh, my gosh. A behind-the-scenes 3D tour using augmented reality. Holy cow.
This was the quickest check-in I've ever had for a cruise, by the way, because you can use an app, and usually you have to wait in these long lines, even when you're doing these media days. And this was just quick. You go through the security. You show them the app. And you're good to go. And you can book everything on there. They have Apple. They're actually, my sister's with me. She's doing an iPhone course today or an Apple Watch.
I love that. I love the enrichment stuff that they do on board these cruise ships now. Wow, this is nice. I've never been on a celebrity cruise, but this is pretty darn impressing.
Well,
impressive.
You should definitely check it out. Yeah. And I'm on their Wi-Fi right now, and it seems to be pretty good. Yes.
No. I would not. If you had told me I want to be on a cruise ship Wi-Fi for the show, I would have said no. That's pretty good. I think that's encouraging to me that the internet's getting better and better on these newer ships. That's really cool. Well, have a nice sail. Do you want to tell us anything? Oh, look, he froze. As soon as he said he was on the ship's Wi-Fi, fortunately, he froze with a nice big smile on his face. Thank you, Joe. They heard you mention the ship's Wi-Fi, and Johnny Jet disappeared off the face of the planet. I see him. I think that's him calling on the hotline. What happened?
Can you hear me now? I jinxed it.
You jinxed it. The minute you mentioned it, you froze. You froze with a nice smile, though, I got to say.
I was like, oh, my God, I actually jinxed it. I couldn't believe it when I saw my face frozen.
That's the funniest thing ever. Somebody's building, and this is a wild idea, and I don't think I would go on this ship, but I saw that somebody is building a replica of the Titanic.
Yes, I did see that as well.
Tycoon plans a Titanic 2, except this one will have more lifeboats, says the New York Times.
And it's going to do the same path as the Titanic.
Golly, I don't think I'm going to sail on that one. He's a brave man building the next Titanic. Wow. So, maybe history buffs would do it. So Johnny usually joins us to help us travel better with technology. And I always put him on the spot and say, give us a website, give us an app.
Yeah, so, you know, since I am on a cruise, I figured we'd talk about, you know, some of the best ways to book a cruise.
Yes. You told me, and I believe it, always use a travel agent.
Well, you know, if you're a first-time cruiser, definitely use a cruise agent.
Okay.
Use a travel agent that specializes in cruises because they'll tell you exactly what to expect, and they usually can get you really good upgrades and things like that.
They almost always, at least my experience has been, have additional discounts or shipboard credits, things like that they can give you.
Yeah, but if you're an experienced cruiser, and even some not so experienced, you know, there's a few different websites you want to check out. CruiseCritic.com/bargains.
I read Cruise Critic before I go on any boat. Yep.
Yeah, and I've just ran into two of them here, the editor including. Another site you want to check out is Costco Travel. They do a good job with cruises as well.
So that would still be a travel agent, but it's through Costco.
Exactly. So if you're a Costco member, you want to compare fares rates with everybody. So, you know, try them all.
That's interesting. So I always just assumed that the rate you see if you go to a cruise line's website is the rate you're going to get. But you can shop.
You can definitely shop around, and you can see which ones have the best deals. And actually, there's another site called CruiseCompete.com, which actually makes the travel agents or the cruise agents go up against each other. You put in what you want, and then they'll come back and they'll pitch you their prices. So actually, I'll tweet them out, and I'll put them in the chat room so you can see the different links.
CruiseCompete.com. That's interesting. I'm not aware of that one.
And I use a cruise planners. Mike Gelman is my guy. I'm happy to email anyone his contact, and he's great. And again, he's an expert. Not necessarily always the cheapest, but you will not be disappointed in your cruise.
I'm surprised that given his busy duties producing Live with Regis and Kelly, he has time to be your cruise travel agent as well.
That's right.
No, not the same Mike Gelman, I presume. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I forgot you used to be on that show.
Oh, I know Michael very well. He's actually a great guy. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
A cruise is a great way to have a family vacation. And we were actually supposed to do it for my dad's 90th birthday last week.
Oh, but it's my dream to go on a big family cruise once my kids get married and have kids of their own. I see that all the time with grandparents and the whole family. And what a great – they're always having a blast. They'll have big tables in the dining room. They can all get together. Seems like so much fun.
And it's so reasonable because food is included. You don't have to worry about a big check at the end. So that's why family or generation cruises, whatever you're doing, bachelor parties, bachelorette, they're popular. Although the bachelorette and bachelor parties are usually on like the lower tier cruises, and you don't really want to go on those.
Oh, I don't want to go anywhere where the, you know, the cruise to nowhere, where it's all about how much booze you can consume and how little time. Right. I stay away from those cruises unless you're young, and that sounds like a great idea. But it's not the cruise I want to go on.
And those are the budget ones. You won't find it here on like Celebrity Edge or
yeah, no, those are, that's more carnivals and their ilk. Okay. Johnny, we're out of time. I hope you have a wonderful time on the Celebrity Edge. I'm so jealous, and I hope they fix their Wi-Fi before you sail. You broke it, man. You broke it. Johnny Jett's on the web at johnnyjett.com. You can get travel deals there, read more about it, all his stuff that he talks about. You can also follow him on Twitter and Instagram. There's always great stuff on his Instagram and Twitter accounts. Are you bringing the wife and Jack with you, or is it just you?
No, you know, we just flew from New York to L.A., and I dropped them at home, and they have friends coming in, and I flew back here.
Aw, rough duty sister. For Dad. Johnny Jett. Thank you, Johnny. Oh, you're going to have a blast. I am so jealous.
Sorry, I jinxed it. I mean, I thought it was going...
The minute you said... You know what you probably did? You probably hit the bandwidth limit. You know, the...
Right.
I bet you did, because it cut off so abruptly that I think you probably hit the limit, like of the number of bites you get. That'd be my guess, but who knows?
Well, I'll find out.
Call the captain.
All right. Well, you have a great week.
Oh, man. I'm so jealous. That looks so much fun. Have a great time. Is the weather nice, too?
It's actually cloudy today, but it's 80 degrees.
So. Have fun. Have a blast. All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye, John.
See you later. See you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Oh, I should mention, I didn't finish the plug for Epson. Epson's Fast Photo brings you the Johnny Jett segment. The Epson Fast Photo Scanner. Preserve what's priceless with the Epson Fast Photo Scanner. The world's fastest personal photo scanner in its class. Easily restore, save, organize, and share your memories. On we go. With the show, line one, Stuart in Los Angeles. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Leo. First of all, happy holidays, and thanks for all the help you've provided over all these years.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening.
It's a pleasure to be able to tap into your geek expertise.
Oh.
Thanks. Actually, maybe that's a good new word.
Geek expertise.
Geek expertise. I have two related questions. I have inherited a box of old 8mm film from my ute.
Uh-oh.
And it's a rather large box. And I entertained at one point making this a project where I would do it myself. But
no.
It just seems overwhelming, yes. And I didn't want to end up with a bad quality project.
It is. So, yes.
Yeah. So I concluded I'm going to blind faith send them off to a service, but I'm looking for either recommendation for one or two services. There are big box stores offer that, but I know there's a few specialty.
So the one advantage of a big box store is you can hand carry those precious 8mm movies to the store. You don't have to put them in the mail. And I know a lot of people that kind of worries them that they're going to have to put these in the mail. In fact, that's kind of kept my mom from doing this. I got from for her a box from Scan Cafe. This is for stills. And, you load it up as big as you can, and she just refuses to mail them. And I don't blame her because, honestly, if those slides got lost, it'd be a heartbreaker. Scan Cafe is one of the biggest, the best known. They do film conversion as well as photo scanning. And I've had good results with them. The other thing to look at is maybe... You're in Los Angeles. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a local company that will do it, and you can carry it over. They'll do it and give it back to you so it never hits the mail at all, which might be a really nice thing. And I'm sure in Los Angeles there are many companies that do this. So, but I don't have a recommendation because I haven't used any of them. So what I'm going to do, this is a good time. You know, it's the geekspertise doesn't just flow from my mouth. It flows from the chat room. It flows from the listeners. So I'm just going to say, if there's anybody who has
done. You said it's they're Super 8?
Most are 8 millimeter and some are Super 8. Okay. You know, it was 30 to 40 years ago. You know, almost none of them have, maybe one or two have audio on it with some, but most of them are just, you know, flickery 8 millimeter films that don't want to put on digital before they decay, if they haven't already. I'm sure.
I'm looking on Yelp, and there's somewhere with a good name, Hollywood Audio Video Transfer House. That sounds, that's got some good reviews. I mean, Yelp reviews are also going to help with that kind of thing. Somebody's saying, somebody's mentioning the Los Angeles Video Transfer.net. Now, guys, if you're just Googling it, that's not helpful. Yeah. I want somebody with real experience because Stuart can Google. Google's easy.
Yeah.
Just
geek enough to be able to do that.
Yeah, there's one that just does 8mm called just8mm.com.
Okay.
You could definitely price shop. I honestly love the idea. I mean, you know, I've used Scan Cafe. I've used these mail-in places before, but I love the idea of with something this precious.
Yeah.
I'm presuming it's precious. With something this precious.
Well, I have to wait till I see them.
Yeah, they may not be at all, right? On the other hand, it might be the next Steven Spielberg movie. He do a movie or 8mm, something like that? I think it's probably worth hand carrying them. And given that you're in L.A., it'd be different if you're in Des Moines, but you're in L.A. James DeRuffo, who's our show notes guru, and is in L.A., he says Pro 8 millimeter is in Burbank, Pro 8mm.
Right.
You know, being in Burbank probably means they do a lot of industry work.
Right.
So that would, you know, that may make it more expensive, but it may also make it a better job. You know, so.
Yeah, the other thing to do is do it in piecemeal and see how somebody does.
That's not a bad idea. Send them one reel. Yeah.
I'm not sending off the whole box and oops or something. That's a little too dangerous.
James says he's used them. They're very good, and they have a 10% off deal right now. So thank you, James DeRuffo. Pro8mm.com. They say they're the 8mm experts. Well, they say Super 8, but I think that's probably the same as 8. I mean, it's not, but I mean, if they do Super 8, they probably do 8. I'd call them. Yeah.
Okay, I have a related question. So I'm going to end up getting these back in a DVD format, I presume, from them, or I guess you could also get it back on a hard drive or whatever you order.
If I had the choice, I would not do DVD. And here's why. DVD, in order for a DVD player to a DVD disc to play in your DVD player, it has to be a DVD format, which means MPEG-2, which is not the highest quality codec out there anymore. So I would say if they will do it, give you a hard drive or a USB drive with H.264 or even better yet, H.265, one of the new modern codecs, you'd get a much better result.
Yeah, well, what my plan is I presume I'm going to get these back in not a particular order and unedited and all that. And I have brother and sister who I wanted to ultimately convert these into another hard drive and give it to them so they could have it as well.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. You're gonna want it digital anyway. And so putting it on a DVD means one more step. And why not just get it in the bits on a hard drive? And that way you can put it up on a site or whatever, distribute it, mail it, however you want to distribute it to friends and family. I think that's a really good idea. It's interesting. This company, Pro8mm.com, actually rents Super 8 cameras. I guess there's this is not surprising, a growing group of nostalgia buffs who want to make films, filmmakers who want to make films on Super 8. So they rent and sell Super 8 cameras, which means they probably be pretty good on scanning your 8mm to digital.
Sure. Well, the related question I have then is I need to buy a new computer, and I have an old MacBook Pro 2011, if you can believe, which is dying. A video card now is consistently causing it to crash.
Yeah, honestly, those old MacBook Pros are fine, but if it's dying,
it's great,
not. Yeah.
Well, apparently there's a known problem with a 2011 video processing, whatever it causes it to crash. And if it happened in 2012 or 13, they would have fixed it. But now that it's so far out, they're just saying.
Thanks.
But it's okay. It's time for a new computer. It's hard to hold on.
Well, yeah, finally Apple's put out new Macs that are quite impressive.
Yes. So, and I want to buy one. But the question is it the MacBook, new MacBook Pro with, you know, most of the bells and whistles and, you know, added.
It's all down to price, honestly. If you wanted the best MacBook ever made, I would say the i9. I bought it, the i9-based MacBook Pro. It's pricey, but it is a beautiful machine. Edits video like a charm, including 4K video. So it'd be a great choice for video editing. Of course, Apple's come with iMovie, which is a great, simple video editor, but then you can upgrade for just a couple $100 to Final Cut, which is literally the pro's choice for video editing in many cases. So if you don't want to spend that much money, look at a Mac Mini. The Mac Mini is actually a pretty good choice. They have some very good processor speeds. They start at $700, or maybe it's $800 now. I think they raised the prices. So I think the new Mac Mini really might be the sweet spot. I'll talk more about that in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, I think price-wise, the Mac Mini is very interesting. I bet, maybe not, but a lot of people have keyboard, mouse, and monitor lying around. They don't need to buy a new one, right?
My wife has a work computer, which we bought, one of the Dell, the large, high-quality monitor and a keyboard. So I could plug it in that and use that as the home computer.
Yeah.
But I need a laptop to go. I do lectures sometimes at work, and I need a computer for moving around and travel. So I think I want to get a laptop. But I guess my question is, you know, should I get a MacBook Air for doing my basic stuff like web, searching and mail and, you know, bank and spreadsheets and stuff, et cetera, nothing too labor intensive, and then buy a Mac Mini to do this project and have it home? Or should I just get the big, high-end MacBook Pro and make it the
If you go to the Apple store, because one of the things you'll see immediately is that the MacBook Pro is not really that much bigger than the MacBook Air.
I know, yeah.
I bought a MacBook Air. I have both the i9 Pro and the new MacBook Air. And the reason I bought the MacBook Air is I have a great nostalgia for it. I always loved the MacBook Air, and I do think that they have been.
You should marry the MacBook
Air. I should marry it. I should.
No,
we could go on a honeymoon. I will take it on my honey. But no,
no,
I do love it, and it's. I feel nostalgia for it. But I have to say, it's light. It's fast enough. It's not a very fast computer, so you couldn't really. I wouldn't want to do video editing on it. I'm sure it would do it. It'd just be slow. But I don't. I notice I'm not pulling out the i9 MacBook Pro very much because the Mini is exact for that. For the stuff you described, you know, like doing the email, checking the web. The day-to-day work stuff. Air is fantastic.
I don't use it for much more than that, except my biggest project I see coming down the pipe was this video editing thing, and I just thought, I'm not sure the MacBook Air would do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it on that. Yeah, so if you want to buy one, get a MacBook Pro, because as I said, they're not that much bigger.
Right.
And they're pretty darn nice.
Can I get away with the i7?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't even, maybe even the i5 would be fine.
Or i5.
What you get on the MacBook Pro that you don't get on the Air is a really fast hard drive, which is for this going to be the most important thing, and a discrete GPU, which is also going to be fairly important.
Right.
So those two things, I think, will make video editing much simpler.
Right.
An i5 is going to be plenty of processor power.
Okay.
And then
16 gigs of...
Yes, 16 gigs. And remember, because they have Thunderbolt 3, you don't have to get a giant internal drive. You can put all of the digitized movies on a Thunderbolt external drive, edit them, and not carry them around. So 512 gigs would probably be fine. I mean, you can get a terabyte. I got a terabyte.
And you recommend that Seagate as the extra? I had some Western.
I actually don't recommend either of those.
That's what Wirecutter suggests. So just
I like the Wirecutter. If they say it's okay, then it's okay. But I generally for, well, I guess, you know, maybe I'm a sucker because I like the more Mac branded hard drives, okay, like the G drive.
That's a Mac product?
No, right? It's designed for the Mac though. You know, what I would rather see you do is get a Thunderbolt 3, and this is going to be pricey, but if for best reliability and performance, get a Thunderbolt 3 enclosure, and then you could put a couple of Samsung Evos inside there. And because it's RAID, your data is safer and it's a lot faster, but that's not going to be cheap. So that's kind of depends on...
Everything's relevant.
It's all relative. Thunderbolt 3 external for the Macintosh. I would go to MacSales.com and you can browse around.
Okay.
I have one from... what's the name of it? It's kind of... Oh, Akitio. A-K-I-T-I-O. A-K-I-T-I-O. They make some really good Thunderbolt 3. Make sure you get one that's compatible with the Mac. Not all of them are. But Thunderbolt 3 enclosures. And they're not horribly expensive. Like the Akitio node. No, that's a eGPU. Is that what it is? What? Oh, yeah, the Duo. It looks like a little... It looks kind of funny. It looks like a Mac Pro. It's Thunderbolt 3. You put a couple of drives in there, and you get some really nice performance. It's only $369 minus the drives.
Mm-hmm.
So that would give you such fast performance that it would be as fast, almost as fast as the internal drive.
Wow.
So and it would give you a lot of capacity and some reliability. That way, you can save the money on an internal drive. But have this for when you're docked, when you're home.
Don't get just stick with the 256.
Apple charges a lot for the internal drives. So I think overcharges. I bought a terabyte, but it was like $700 or something. It was crazy.
Yeah. I think to go to from 256 to 512 wasn't that out of control.
Yeah. 512 would be the sweet spot. That's what I think that's a good... That's enough so that you could bring everything you wanted to as you travel around.
Right.
When you get home and you need some significant storage.
Right. And for backup.
And backup, you've got this really fast. And because it's two PCIe slots in the enclosure, you can use RAID, you can use redundant RAID and make sure that data is never lost, or you could decide to opt for speed and use RAID 0. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like this Akitio. I hope this one.
You
works.
Order them through Akitio, or you?
I'd go.
Throw in two drives. I don't throw drives into things, so I don't know what you're talking.
Yeah. It comes empty, have to buy drives to put in it, or if you've got, I would put SSD drives in it for real speed.
Sure.
You can get it on Amazon, but the other thing to do is go to MacSales.com. They make.
I see.
It's all Apple compatible, and they have Thunderbolt 3 stuff as well.
Okay. Maybe I'll just buy a Mac Mini 2 and then
that's another way to go. Yeah, that's a really good. I think the Mac Mini is really kind of cool.
At home.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good for maybe another 5 years too, I would imagine.
It has, and because it has all the connectors on it,
you're
really golden with that one. The only thing is it's got a fairly slow GPU, but because it has the Thunderbolt 3, you could, if you decided I need more GPU, you could actually get an external GPU fairly cheaply, and those are upgradable. So
there's, got it.
It gets complicated when you get to this kind of level, but that's kind of what Apple wanted to do, is be flexible. They wanted to give people a lot of options.
Yeah. It's hard not to pull the trigger and get a Mac Mini when you just look at it like, well, it's $800.
It's so cute.
They just put it in the corner and,
I don't need one and I want one.
Yeah.
I don't need new computers ever. I always have way too many, but I'm looking at Otherworld Computing's Envoy Pro external SSD. It's small, it's portable. It isn't dual drive, but it's relatively inexpensive. You can get a terabyte for $300. That'd be probably just fine.
Envoy.
Yeah, it's MacSales.com.
Oh, well, MacSales.
Yeah. Hey, I got to run.
Okay, thank you so much.
Take care.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smart phones, smart watches, all that jazz. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, coming up. I think it's time for a photo review. So if you took pictures for our photo assignment and you've uploaded them to our Flickr group, stand by. We're going to pick three of them and review those in about half an hour. Meanwhile, back to the phones. My good friend G. Scott on the line from South Lake Tahoe. Hi, G. Scott.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you? I call you my good friend because I see you in the chat room every week.
Yep. Well, you know, more in the winter than the summer. We're off now. I'm a contractor in the summertime, so I work hard. But I had to come and visit here. Good. We're in California now, so it's off season.
Nice. Well, that sounds like a good lifestyle. You work hard in the summer and you enjoy life in the winter.
Absolutely. Not to rush anything, but happy almost birthday to you here this week.
Aw, thank you. It is coming up, isn't it? When you get past a certain age, birthdays lose some of their luster. But what the heck?
That's a bad one. I'm 6 months behind you.
So. Oh, you're close. All right. Yep. That's good.
Yep.
So anyway, Mike B. said I'll be a senior citizen this week. I don't know if that's a nice thing to say.
So last we talked, I was having some speed issues with my Surface Studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hard drive upgrade, I've purchased a 970 Evo M.2 drive and a terabyte Crucial 2.5-inch SSD. But and I watched Father Robert's video on know-how. But in researching, I guess I didn't understand the hybrid setup, and my assumption was that the M2 would be the working drive and the spinning drive would be data. So, and also further research shows that I could put everything on the M.2 drive and then maybe use
my suggestion, and this is what we did on our Surface Studio. The Surface Studio is really a gorgeous machine. It's Microsoft's all-in-one, but it has a huge display. What is it? Is it 30 inches? It's a really big display. Very high resolution touch display. It's like a giant iPad. Unfortunately, and it's pricey. It starts at, I think, $3,000. But unfortunately, all that money goes towards the screen, and it has a fairly underpowered processor and hard drive setup. In fact, we found that with the original Surface Studio, do you have the new one or the original?
I've got the original.
Okay, that's what we upgraded. We found that if we put in, it came with that goofy Intel hybrid drive solution, which I don't like. In fact, really, it's obsolete, I think, these days. The idea was way back in the day when solid state drives were vastly expensive, Apple did this too with a Fusion drive. They did a little bit of a better job than Intel did. Intel would sell, or companies would sell using this Intel technology, a small, like 64 gig solid state drive. Small, really too small to be useful. And then pair it with a large, say, terabyte spinning drive. But it looked like a single drive to the operating system. And the theory was, as the firmware worked, as you used the computer, it would move the stuff you needed access to the fast drive, and the stuff that you didn't, you know, access all the time or need speed from onto the spinning drive. That's a good theory, but it never really made a big difference. And I found it to be very slow. So my suggestion is take advantage of the fact that you have two drive capability for two drives in there, and put a fast M.2 drive in for your boot, you know, 128 gigs, 256, depending on how many applications you want to run there. And then a second drive, that could be a spinning drive. I think that's what Father Robert did. Watch the video. I don't remember exactly what he did. As the second drive, and don't turn them into a hybrid solution. Use them as C and D. I don't think...
Okay.
I'm not sure what... I'll be honest, that's my guess what Robert did. I didn't pay that much attention when you
get it. I think there are two SSDs in that, and that's how I'm set up.
Yeah, I bought two SSDs. I bought a fast one for the M.2 and a slower one for the SATA. But I happen to like SSDs, and there's no reason nowadays, you know, that whole hybrid thing doesn't make any sense because SSDs aren't that expensive anymore. So I put two SSDs in there, yep.
So, you know, and not researching this ahead of time, I've got a 500 gig 970 Evo.
That's a very nice SSD, so, yeah.
Right, so throw my OS on that, boot to that, and then put the other just terabyte 2.5-inch SSD as my D drive then. That's your suggestion?
Yeah.
Okay.
But watch the video because I'm sure he explains what he did. As I said, I bought the drives. I remember talking to him, but it's been a couple of years. And, you know, the funny thing is that Microsoft has updated the Surface Studio. It's still hideously expensive, and I don't think they made it a particular – it's practically a laptop in that desktop computer. And I think that that's kind of a bad choice. However, once we put
I just carried it from Minnesota California pretty easily.
Oh, man. It's not that portable.
With a handle.
I love it. And once we put in new solid-state drives to replace the sluggish drives Microsoft put in, the thing performs just fine. I feel no need to upgrade it. I'm very happy with it.
Yeah. My only thing, I'll probably buy another one from Minnesota or California.
Oh, you like them.
The trouble with two. Yeah, yeah.
Do you use it for design? Is that what you're using it for?
Yeah, you know, I do design and site work and plans, and just having that, you know, because I've been doing it on laptop forever. Having a mouse in hand again is really nice. Obviously, that screen is killer. And
it's beautiful.
So for me, I probably, you know, to not have to carry them back and forth, I'll probably end up with another one. But that's only because I live in a crazy world.
Yeah, it's a pain to go back and forth, I'm sure, with it, because it isn't small. I use it, and it turned out to be a really good choice. A number of our podcasts, I'm at a big, as you know, I'm not telling you anything, but for the rest of the audience, I'm at a big round table with panelists. You know, it's kind of a news show. I do several of those. And I sit in the middle, and as the moderator, I love having this thing, because first of all, normally when you're on TV or on camera, having a laptop or a computer in front of you blocks the view. It's kind of ugly. This thing you can tilt down to 15-degree angle, so it's completely out of the way. It looks like I'm sitting at a slightly tilted desk. So I can, and it's a big screen, and I can use my hands as well as a mouse and a keyboard, so I can, you know, look up stories and show stuff. And then if I want to show stuff, it has a pen. I double-click the Microsoft Pencil. It takes a screenshot of the window I've got open, and I can telestrate it. And I have to tell you, you know, we, back in the day at Tech TV, to do a telestrator was a phenomenally expensive thing. You know, the football, you remember John Madden, when you go, pow, boom, we're going to telestrate the game. That was a phenomenally expensive bit of equipment that you had to buy, and you had to have special gear, and it was, you know, we never could afford it, frankly, at Tech TV. Now you've got a PC, a Microsoft Surface would do it too. You know, the Surface Pro, you don't have to get the big studio. Studio's great though for these TV shows. I think it's purpose built for that. If you're an illustrator, we had Patrick Delahanty, my programmer's wife, Svet, does children's books, and she's a great illustrator. We had her come in and draw on it. She loved it. For the kind of thing you're doing, design, CAD, that kind of thing, it couldn't be better.
Yep.
I mean, it's kind of a specialty computer, and I know Microsoft hasn't sold many of them, but I think they've done a bang-up job with the Surface Studio. I really like it. If you have a need. It's not a great all-in-one, oddly enough. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk high-tech with me, I love talking high-tech with you. I'd love to hear from you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888-ASK-LEO. Leo, Chris Marquardt coming up, our photo guy. Lots more of your calls, too. We'll see you in just a minute. Now, there's one thing you might want to do by hand to save money, save time, and that's install your own home security system from SimpliSafe. Where's my SimpliSafe? Oh, I might have brought it home. SimpliSafe is awesome. If you've been thinking about getting a SimpliSafe home security system, and maybe you thought there'd be a deal, with the holidays and all. You were smart. You waited because we got a great deal for you from Simply Safe. Order today. You get 25% off any new Simply Safe system. Simply Safe has all the sensors. They have the motion detectors, the window and door opening sensors. They've even got things like pipe, you know, water sensors for pipe bursts. It's just you install it yourself. It's simple. You put them where you want them. By the way, it's designed so it's easy to remove as well. So if you move, these are renters love this because if you move, you can take your whole system with you. PC Magazine, CNET, Wirecutter all say Simply Safe is the best security system out there. No hidden fees, no contract, and yes, you can have around the clock professional monitoring. Same monitoring the other guys are offering for $50-$60 a month, $15 a month, $14.99 with no long-term contract. I'm a big fan. SimplySafe.com/twit. Protect your home today and get a great deal on home security. Now's the time. If you've been thinking about it, save 25%. You don't want somebody coming in and stealing all your Christmas presents, your Hanukkah presents. No, no, no. Get home security done right at SimplySafe.com/twit. 25% off your Simply Safe system. This is really great. And again, $14.99 a month with no contract for professional monitoring. I like to be, now maybe that's just me. I don't like an installer to come in the house, ladder drills, traipse around, install stuff. I want to put these up myself. I want to plan that out, think about it. I love the idea that you just peel and stick. They're very easy to install. And you get all that stuff in there. The Simply Safe base unit is solid as a rock. You could even, you know, try to destroy it. So criminals could try to destroy it. It'll still work. The monitoring will still work. The keypad, everything. It's so easy to install. You control it. You could take it with you if you move. And $15 a month for around-the-clock professional monitoring. 25% off right now. SimplySafe.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, coming up in just a little bit. Meanwhile, Dr. Bird in Los Angeles. Hello, Dr. Bird.
You bet. Remember, I'm down here in Laguna Niguel there, Leo.
I remember.
Yep.
The king of bird photography.
Absolutely. You know what? You should ask Chris while he's on the air with you if he, like you, have had a chance to use the R camera.
The R camera?
Yeah, meaning the new Canon mirrorless R camera. You got to remember, Leo, Canon, like Nikon, they're now getting into the mirrorless 35-millimeter digital SLR-based cameras.
I know. In fact, I was just talking down the hall to Mo, our studio guard, because he's become an avid amateur photographer. He's thinking about getting the Nikon mirrorless. And I will ask Chris, I don't know if he's tried them yet. I have to say, both Canon and Nikon seem to have shown some reluctance to make mirrorless cameras that are too good.
Like Sony.
Yeah, well, Sony does, and Sony never had a DSLR business, not much of one anyway. So yeah. Sony didn't have a business to cannibalize, but let's not forget that Canon and Nikon have very, you know, long-standing reputations as the kings of DSLRs.
Absolutely.
And so mirrorless for them is a bit of a challenge. They're getting their lunch handed to them, I think, in my opinion, by Sony, but who's and others who are making great mirrorless cameras, but Canon and Nikon only recently announced theirs, and I think that they did it with some reluctance. I haven't tried either one.
But that's what I wanted to know, Leo. That was the question I had for you, because you're the tech guy, and if Canon were to have their head on straight, they would have sent you one to give it a try.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't expect companies to send me stuff. I have to say I've looked at DP Review and talked to DP Review's reviewers on both the Nikon and the Canon, the EOS R. They just published their review of a couple of days ago. It's a 30-megapixel sensor. It's the same full-frame sensor as in their 5D Mark IV, which is
absolutely
what I have and is an amazing camera. But they now have to you have to get new lenses because they have a shorter lens mount. And I'm sure there's an adapter. That's one of the advantages mirrorless has is that the short lens mount means that you can easily put an adapter on. The Sony's will run almost any glass. And I bet you the Canon will also, with the proper adapters, use EF mount, their traditional Canon lenses as well.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised about that. Nikon, when I read about the Nikon, It sounded like, you know, for instance, they only had one memory card, not two. They did some things to, I think, artificially make their mirrorless less attractive to professional shooters. Clearly trying to preserve their business in the DSLRs, the mirror cameras. And I have not yet looked at the R, but remember, it's $2,300. That's a significantly less than the Mark IV, the 5D, and I'm guessing that they're going to also make it somehow less good because they don't want to kill that business yet. And this is always they call it the innovator's dilemma. It's always the problem in technology. If you have a thriving business like Google does or Apple does, it's very hard for you to do something innovative, because it would cannibalize that thriving business. It's why Kodak went out of business. It's why Polaroid went out of business. It's why the New York Times is struggling. How do you go from being a newspaper printed on dead trees to a digital news service with, you know, in a timely fashion without cannibalizing, without killing your existing business? The Kodak's problem was, for instance, as an example, Kodak made all of, they saw the digital revolution coming. They knew. In fact, they were one of the early digital camera makers. They were very much in favor of digital. They bought Ophoto. They made a digital site for their, you know, storing photos. They did everything they could, but it turns out you couldn't make as much money in digital photography as you could in film processing and printing, which is right, where Kodak made all their money. There was no way to save that business, even though they saw digital coming. And I wonder if Canon and Nikon are somewhat reluctant to kill.
Well, Leo, here's my impression.
Have you tried them? Have you used them? Now, you're a bird photographer. Mirrorless is great for that.
I had a chance.
Okay.
I went down to the Canon Learning Center. They had one on display, but they didn't want anybody basically to touch it.
Oh.
And it's really disappointing because when I looked at the camera and I looked at the controls, it is nothing like a 5D Mark IV, a 1DX.
Yeah.
A 70 Mark II.
Exactly.
And this is what's upsetting me about Canon and Nikon as well, like what you mentioned. What they're doing, they figure that the market is now going to want a mirrorless camera. I say no way.
Oh.
You look at sports photographers.
Yeah.
People that do Formula One, people that do NASCAR, people that do sports, baseball, tennis ball. You do that. I mean, these people, they're never going to use a mirrorless camera because it doesn't have the frame rate. It doesn't have the accessibility.
I disagree 100% with you. Actually, the frame rate is much limited by the physics of a mirrored camera. I can shoot the fastest frame rates of any camera right now with my Sony A9. I could shoot a frame rate that's basically video, 30 to 50 frames a second, and that's an amazing thing for sports shooting because, as you know, the same thing with birds. You can't know exactly when that shot is unless you're lucky and you get exactly the right shot. The fact that you can do a burst mode that catches 20 to 30 frames a second means you're much more likely to get just that right shot. The issues for you, I know, are fast autofocus and continuous focus. And I have to say, looking at the DP review on the Canon, that is not a very good thing about the Canon EOS R. Certainly, if for a bird photographer, it'd be a bad choice. Not to mention that you have to get all new lenses. But I'd be willing to stand a mirrorless camera up to a mirrored camera. You know who we should ask about this? Maybe as you said, ask our photo guy, Chris Marquardt. He's coming up in just a little bit. It is, you know, this is why I love covering technology. It doesn't stay still. There's always new technology, and if you think about it, and I, you know, in the past, the IBMs of the world have risen and then faded over time, and I think that's happening faster and faster because times change so rapidly these days, and technology is even faster probably than any other area. So I wonder if the Googles, the Microsofts, the Canons, the Nikons of the world, what 10 years from now, will they still be dominant? Facebook, will it still be dominant 10 years from now? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, maybe the counter story to that is that they have so many users now, it'd be hard for somebody to come along and best them. But what if you did a better Facebook, maybe a more private Facebook or a better Google, couldn't you just unseat them in a matter of days? Tell you what, we'll ask Chris Marquardt about the mirrorless, and he's also going to do a photo review of our all of our glasses pictures. Thank you, Dr. Bird. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and yeah, the photography conversation goes on. I apologize if you're here for Windows talk, but it's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris's photo segment brought to you by the amazing Epson Fast Photo Scanner. Preserve what's priceless with the Epson Fast Photo, the world's fastest personal photo scanner in its class. Easily restore, save, organize, and share your memories with the Epson Fast Photo. Chris Marquardt is a professional photographer, the one who doesn't mind getting his hands dirty with new technology. He is also a great teacher, and his workshops are widely available and then immediately sold out at discoverthetopfloor.com. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. Speaking of the mirrorless full-frame cameras.
Yes, I was going to ask your opinion.
Every manufacturer has brought out a mirrorless. Almost everyone has brought out or announced a mirrorless.
Nikon and Canon were kind of the last to the table, weren't they?
Well, I mean, Sony had that market since 2013, and they had to do something because Sony was taking away a lot from them. And I'm, as you said, I'm a professional. I don't really use them yet. I believe my DSLRs, the ones that I have that I use right now, are the last DSLRs that I'll ever buy. I think mirrorless is the future. I'm kind of happy and sad about this at the same time.
Yeah, but I still have film cameras you love too.
I love all the cameras.
Yeah,
but you know the positive thing is they have WYSIWYG. They show you what you get up front, so the learning curve is a very different one. With a DSLR, you kind of have to know what you're getting by looking through the viewfinder and by knowing the settings. They're a bit smaller. The cameras, not the lenses, but the cameras. But I mean, what the caller, the previous caller said, I mean, I'm totally with him. The controls will change. Your muscle memory, that's an investment. And if you have a new camera, that's with every system change, you will have to relearn a lot of things. So, yeah. So, and the new mounts they announced, the bigger mounts, are kind of positive and negative. On the one hand, they become a bit more future-proof for brighter lenses. On the other hand, it means that you won't be able to use your old lenses without an adapter. So sooner or later, they'll want you to buy new lenses. It's just the way it goes.
It's a changing world. Do you think DSLRs, the mirror cameras, will go away?
Oh, they're on the way out. Absolutely sure. Yeah. I'm not happy about it, but I'm sure that that's what's going to happen. And hey, you have some advantages with those other cameras.
I still have a 62-year-old Leica M3 film camera. Yeah. You know, rangefinder camera. They may go away, but people still use them and still get great images. You know, the truth. Here's the real truth of it: the quality of your imagery is completely unrelated to the camera you're using.
True. Yeah. Very true.
Camera does not make the photographer any more than the typewriter makes the writer. So we have a photo assignment, some great images with people illustrating the word or the concept glasses.
Yep. Glasses was the assignment. And again, thanks everyone for playing with us and for submitting your photos. I have again chosen three of them, and let's look at them. First one by Mike Rollison. Title is 80s Bunny Bee, which is the name of the model. He's done a photo shoot in the studio with studio flashes. And I like it because, I mean, it's a very clean photo. It's a very, it's a posed photo. It's a studio shot. But the glasses play a fundamental role in it because they, together with the colors and the hairdo and everything, they tell you it's an 80s photo. That's what the shape of the glasses does for you in conjunction with everything else. All the color effects you see there, apparently he has done in camera. He has done this with color gels in front of the flashes. So there's no Photoshop coloring in there.
It's cool because this is on Flickr, and that's where we put all the entries to our contest in our tech guy group at Flickr. You can read, he's put all the notes of the different strobes, the strobist information. Yeah. So you can really see what, you know, he's being very open about the technique he's using, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. Yeah. Second one is by Roy Godfrey, titled Glasses, and it's glasses sculpture at a Sea Point in Cape Town looking at Robben Island. And it's, yeah, it's a pair of glasses, a big pair of glasses. I don't think you'll be able to wear those. I think they are probably man size. And I like it because it kind of fooled me when I looked at the thumbnail of it. And it looked kind of weird, but I wasn't sure what was weird about it until I opened it. And then I was like, whoa, okay. I like the light in it because it's in the sunset and it's straight into the sun, but you don't see the sun. So it covers the sun with that sculpture of glasses. And this way you have interesting shadows coming right at you. The light behind things is often more interesting than the light shining straight at things. And then the other thing I like about it is the dust in the background, which gives it, I don't know, some depth, and it takes some of the complexity out of the shot. So it's almost like, you know, in a video game when they use the mist to cover the depth and cover stuff in depth, that's what it feels like a bit.
Yeah. So it actually makes the picture.
It makes the picture, yeah. Yeah. It gives that contrast to the foreground. So
yeah.
Good job, Roy.
Very nice, yeah.
And last but not least, from TPLAV82, a shot of a pair of glasses that has apparently had some
distress.
Sort of an accident. Yeah, exactly. Glasses in distress. It's a pair of glasses that has, first of all, the black and white shot. Then it's a pair of glasses that has a whole bunch of scratches on it. Almost looks like it deliberately happened. One side of the glasses is broken in half. And the glasses lie on top of some book, something that has a glossy cover, so the glasses reflect in it. And what I like about it is, well, first of all, it's unusual. It's, you don't see glasses like that very often. What works for me is that, well, this opens up all sorts of possibilities for coming up with your own stories about what happened here. So my thought is someone deliberately distressed those. But, I mean, what's your story, Leo? What do you see there?
I don't know. I think maybe it's kind of has a noir look. So it could be like something left behind after a murder. Yeah. Or it could be a clue. I also, what I really like is he's not only chosen to make it black and white, but he's chosen to make it pretty grainy. And that gives it a nice noir look. It really gives it a feeling, and I think it gives it
a nighttime feeling,
yeah,
of sorts. Yeah,
yeah, it really
very
works.
low yeah. Light, high ISO kind of feeling. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's an example of something that you can do with film, but you can't control it. And there's you know, the graininess of film can be simulated computationally in a photograph, often is, and so. In a way, you know, I think maybe purists would say, well, it's not real grain, but it works, right? Visually, it doesn't matter whether it's real or not. It works.
I beg to differ about the controlling the grain. I can control the grain in the film if I want to.
I guess. If you're shooting Tri-X, though, it's going to be a little grainy.
It's harder, though. It's
a little harder. The grain is actually there because of the silver halide crystals, you know.
Very true.
I guess not silver halide, whatever it is that the film is made up.
Yeah, it's probably silver halide, yeah.
Chris Marquardt, you could find his stuff at discoverthetopfloor.com. Give us a new assignment.
The new assignment, again, we're staying with things that you put on your body. Next is ring.
Ring, R-I-N-G. Take a picture, upload it to Flickr, submit it to Renee Silverman at the Tech Guy Group, and in about a month, we'll pick three to review. Chris's segment brought to you by the amazing Epson Fast Photo Scanner. You could take a film photo, scan it with the Fast Photo Scanner, and upload it. You could do that. It's the world's fastest personal photo scanner in its class. Easily restore, save, organize, and share your memories with the Epson Fast Photo. Chris, we'll talk again next week.
All right.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Ha!
Have you played at all with the Canon or the Nikon mirrorless?
No. Yeah. I played with the Sonys, but I haven't had my hands on the...
I love the Sonys.
Neither the Canons nor the Nikons yet. And I expect them to be good. I mean, what I hear is that the viewfinder, the electronic viewfinder on the Canon is supposed to be spectacular. That used to be kind of the thing I was a bit afraid of. The older electronic viewfinders were too slow for me. But the current ones, most of them feel like you're looking through a mirror. You're looking there. They have almost no latency. And yeah, well, they gave you this live preview, which is a big help.
You get kind of used to that, to be honest.
You know, it's a big, like, when I teach studio photography, I often start doing it with continuous light sources, not flashes, because with a continuous light source, you don't have to anticipate and kind of guess what's coming out. You see what's coming out. And the same is happening with the mirrorless cameras. So, yeah, I think it's not all bad. It's some stuff that the pros who have spent a lot of time learning their cameras have to kind of relearn. So my two DSLRs, my workhorses, are very likely the last DSLRs that I'll buy. So the next ones in a few years will pretty much, to given that they will be mirrorless, yeah.
Part of the issue, of course, is an investment in glass and the need to get new lenses.
Well, the question is, do you need them? I mean, how good are those adapters? I've heard good things about them.
Yeah.
With Canon, they add a feature with some of the adapters where you have this moving ring that gives you an additional feature that you can dial in on the adapter. So, yeah, but again, it's bulk and it's, I don't know, it's just, well, I'm holding out for them to bring their tilt shift lenses to mirrorless. Then I will. then I'll have a reason to switch.
That's a very oddball reason not to switch.
I know.
But it actually, in a larger sense, it is a problem with the Sonys is that they have a very limited native lens selection, and so you don't have nearly the choices that you have in other cameras. They have, and you know, the GM lenses that Sony's making are very good, and I'm so happy with this 24mm GM f1.4 that I bought, that it's going to be pretty much the lens that I use almost all the time. I just love what I'm getting with it. So
don't say it's going to be the last.
Never going to be the last. That's a bad word. No. But it's the lens I'm going to use day in, day out. I'm getting it's great for people shooting.
You're getting the hang of the 24mm.
I love it.
Wide angle. Awesome.
It was perfect for Thanksgiving, you know, for gatherings of people and stuff like that. It's really fun. And it has an incredible bokeh, and it's very fast. So I've been very happy with it. And paired with the A9, it is an amazing setup.
By the way, has the wide angle book arrived? I had the publisher send one your way. Do you get it?
I don't think
Okay, should be there any day.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, I'm going to have so much fun. Thank you.
All right.
I'll give it a plug. Take care, Chris. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What a great eclectic mix coming from our musical director, Big Pee-wee, today. 8888-ASK, Leo, the phone number. Line 1, Austin, Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Austin.
Hey, Leo. Came back from vacation, and my TiVo box has all 4 of its lights flashing on it.
Oh, no. Wow, that's a bummer. Is it filled?
No, it's actually not full. Plenty of space on it. The only thing I can think of is a bad hard drive, but it sounds like it's spinning.
Well, it doesn't mean it's not bad. So, how old is it?
2 years.
That's frustrating, isn't it?
Very frustrating. It looks like they're trying to make me upgrade to the box.
I'll tell you, there is a company in L.A. You'd have to ship it, but there is a company in L.A. that will fix it, called Weak Knees. And I am a big fan of these guys. They helped me way back when I wrote the book about the TiVo. This is back to the Series 1 TiVo. They were really instrumental in this. They sell upgrade hard drives for TiVo and stuff. They're really experts in TiVo. And if I think you could call them anyway and see if they have a suggestion. They may say, look, what we should do is just send you the new hard drive. It's not hard to put it in. And that, you know, would probably fix anything that's wrong with it. The flashing lights on a TiVo can obviously mean a variety of things. I'm looking at fixmytivo.com. Thank you to Ray Toth. And it talks about a number of different things. What are all the lights flashing?
Yeah, it boots up. It shows the TV TiVo logo on the screen, yeah. And then just says no signal.
And which TiVo do you have?
The Bolt, the six tuner Bolt.
So, according to fixmytivo.com, all lights flashing means likely a bad hard drive, but motherboard is also a problem. They offer a replacement hard drive kit or TiVo repair service at fixmytivo.com. I'm not familiar with them, but I do know Weak Knees, and I know they also do the same thing. They say on fixmytivo.com, if a new drive doesn't fix the problem, the unit may not be fixable, which is my guess is that TiVo does not offer repair motherboards. You know, you can't get a replacement motherboard. If the motherboard's bad, that you're going to buy a new TiVo. And the Bolt is fairly new. It's not an old Bolt, right? I mean, it's a couple of years old. So that's devastating, especially since I bet you bought a lifetime subscription.
Just do the yearly subscription.
Oh, good. Yeah. See, I buy lifetime subscriptions and cross my fingers because it's lifetime only for the lifetime of the device. So if that device dies, I'm out all that money.
Exactly.
Yeah. TiVo makes no economic sense, and yet I love them, and I just won't. I won't use the cable company's DVR. Comcast keeps saying, "Oh, X1 is so good; it's better and better," and they keep offering me blandishments. But I love my TiVos, and I have three TiVos, and I'm just not going to. Go back to the cable company DVR.
Exactly. I just couldn't stream anything all weekend, and I figured.
Oh, frustrating.
Just figured it was the internet connection, but no, it won't boot up. So.
We will also put a link in the show notes to that Fix My TiVo link, but also on the TiVo community forum. Raymond's found a thread for the Bolt, four lights flashing on the Bolt, and what it could mean and what solutions there are. I think this is an opportunity, is what I'm going to say, for you to put a nice, big, new hard drive in there. Increase the capacity. Because you can buy third-party hard drives. They're blessed. They're made, you know, functional, just like real TiVo hard drives, and increase your capacity and maybe even get a better hard drive in there.
Definitely. Yeah. What about recovering my shows? Do you think that's possible?
No. I think what you could try, if you're really determined, is take that when you get the new drive. You're going to have to replace the drive, I think. When you get that new drive, take the old one out, put it in an enclosure, because it's a standard PC drive. It's just not formatted standard. And do a drive recovery on it. The only drive recovery that'll work is one that is not specific to the drive formatting. So, you know, the Norton utilities, all the stuff that recovers or unerases stuff won't work because it depends on a Windows file system. This is not a Windows file system. It's a Linux file system, and it's specially formatted. But you know what might work on it is my friend Steve Gibson's SpinWrite, because what you could do is put an enclosure and run SpinWrite on it. And what SpinWrite does is it doesn't care what the format of the drive is. It uses the BIOS in the PC to read a sector. And it won't give up until it gets the data off the sector. And if it's hard to read, it'll relocate it to another sector. It doesn't need to know anything about the drive, geometry, formatting, anything. And so that's about the only thing you could do. That's a very low-level recovery tool. But it often it is just right for this. Now, the problem with that is you run that. You still can't read that drive. You can only read it in a TiVo. So assuming that SpinWrite could, you know, run through it, it might take days. Sometimes it takes weeks, depending on how many errors there are, how hard it is to read them. Then you'd have to take it out of the enclosure, put it back in the TiVo, and try to see if the TiVo boots. And there's no guarantee because, you know, if the bad sector couldn't be read in a key area of the operating system, let's say, it won't boot up. So it's a long shot to get it recovered. You might be able to. but it's a long show.
All right.
Yeah, if you've really got to get, there's that one show on there I got to have, maybe. But my suggestion is go to Weak Knees or Fix My TiVo. Somebody's telling me the drive's encrypted. Yeah, that's why SpinRite will work. SpinRite doesn't care. SpinRite doesn't care if it's encrypted. It's not looking at the data. It's looking at the low-level sectors, reading, writing, reading, writing, reading, writing, reading, writing. And so encryption doesn't matter because it reads it encrypted and writes it encrypted.
Well, I'll definitely give that a try. Well,
all right.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. yeah, thank you. And thanks to the chat room. See, they're so useful. They're so good to have them around. They know their TiVos. TiVo's one of the things, actually, the chat room really, really is helpful for. Very useful. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. On we go to line 4. Charisse, Lancaster, California.
Hi.
Hi, Charisse.
Leo, I have a question for you today. I want to know if there's a way to connect my Mac Mini to my smart Samsung TV. It's a 34-inch. I've been using it as a monitor for my Surface Book Pro.
Yeah, you should be able to. Your Mac Mini, if it has an HDMI port on it, what does it have? It really depends on the connectors coming out of that Mac Mini.
Wait, I don't own one yet. See,
oh,
the
new Mac Mini. Yes, the new Mac Mini will work great. The new Mac Mini has a full-size HDMI 2.0 port on the back. You can connect it up to any monitor that does HDMI. Okay. Now, you're already using your TV that way, so I don't have to give you the caveats I would get at anybody else, which is that televisions are not designed to be computer monitors. Computer monitors are usually higher resolution, crisper than TVs. So if you're editing text or something like that, a computer monitor is going to look better, even though it's smaller than your television. But clearly, you're happy with your TV as a computer monitor. You haven't had problems with it, right?
No, I did it because it was so much less expensive than a monitor.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 1080 monitor, so it's not a bad resolution, yeah. And you can read the text. What are you doing with your computer?
Mostly working, just work from home, you know, okay. Doing the Google Drive, stuff okay. like that.
And it's fine for your writing and reading and all that?
Right, it is. It's great.
Good. Then it would work just as well with a Mac Mini.
But what I want to know is there a way to connect both of them and toggle between the two?
You bet. So the Mac Mini has only one HDMI port, but it has 4 USB-C ports, all 4 of which have video out. The problem is, of course, your TV does not have USB-C coming into it for video. It probably only has HDMI. So what you'll have to buy, but it's not expensive, Apple even sells it, is a Thunderbolt to HDMI adapter. It's a little, I don't know, I think $50 dongle that comes off the back of the Mini. That gives you two HDMI ports. You can plug one into the, you have 2 different TVs? I'm sorry, I'm not paying attention closely. You want to use both computers. What do you want to do?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Surface Book and Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Into the TV.
So the Surface, okay, never mind. Forget what I said. I was thinking 2 TVs, 1 Mac Mini. You've got 2 computers, 1 TV. You just put one on HDMI 1, one on HDMI 2, and you switch the TV around using the TV menu back and forth. And, you know, one will be on the Windows machine, one will be on the Mac. That's a very good use for it. Now, if you want to use one keyboard, mouse, and monitor for all 3, both computers, that's another matter. I'll talk about that later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the issue, you don't mind having the keyboard attached to your Surface, the keyboard attached to your Mac Mini, the keyboard, or do you want to use one keyboard and mouse?
Oh, you know, I hadn't even thought about using one keyboard or mouse, but I guess I am going to need something for the Mac Mini.
So that gets a little more complicated, but it's something called a KVM switch.
Okay.
And that's a box that you plug the output of the Surface into and the output of the Mini into. It has one plug that goes to the TV. You also plug a keyboard and mouse into it. One keyboard, one mouse into it. Then there's a button on the KVM that says, I want to use the Surface today, or I want to use the Mac today. And you just switch back and forth on the KVM. It's called a KVM switch, and it lets you use one monitor, mouse, and keyboard on multiple computers. Actually, they're more than two, even. But all you need is a two-port KVM.
Okay. Do you know if that's the same thing that Surface Book put out? There's some sort of a box that's got all these different inputs?
No, that's their dock.
Oh, okay.
And all that right. just makes it easier for you to connect it to a TV.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So the KVM switch is going to be better and maybe less expensive?
Oh, yeah. Let me look. I'm looking on Amazon at an I.O. gear, which is very good. KVM, two-port USB VGA cable. Yeah, this is VGA. You want HDMI. Let's see. Two-port with audio. Oh, they don't sell it anymore. Well, there'll be other companies that will. Let me keep looking. I.O. Gear is one of the best companies for this stuff, but there's a lot of companies making these. It'll be under $100. Let's put it that way.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I can search for KVM. I just look for KVM.
Yeah, KVM and switch.
HDMI.
Yeah, that's the trick, is make sure it's got the right outputs on it.
Right. Okay. I think this will work. One more question. What do you suggest for the Mac Mini? Which should I get?
Oh, let's see. The base model is maybe. Let me look at the base model. It might be a little underpowered. They always do that. Apple always does that, where they say, look, starts at $799, but then you look at it and you go, well, I don't know. That's kind of a. Let me look at what you get for the base model. I think it's actually pretty good. It's probably enough. $799, a 3.6 gigahertz quad core i3, 8 gigs of RAM. And 128 gig hard drive. Yeah, that's kind of the minimalist. But it might be fine for you. It'd probably be as fast as your Surface. If you wanted to spend a few hundred dollars more, you might want to get a little more memory on it. You might want to get a little bit faster processor. They only give you like two choices, either a i3 or an i7 for $300 more. That's kind of screwy. Apple's, I get the base model. It'll be fine. It doesn't have a lot of storage. I'm not sure how much storage you need. You said you use Google Drive. That means you probably don't need a whole lot.
No, I think I don't. I miss my desktop Mac, my 2007. It still works, but
You'll love this. This will be a lot better. If you can spend a little more, you might want to get a little bit faster processor. And a little bit more. Okay. 8 gig of RAM is a little light. So is a 128 gig hard drive. It's a little light. So, you know, the sweet spot for me, it's the one I bought, but it's not the cheapest one out there, has the i5, 16 gigs of RAM, and a 256 gig hard drive. It's $1,300.
That's so much.
Yeah, get the $799. You'll be fine. The $799, you'll be fine. No, they never go on sale.
Okay, all right.
Get the $799. I don't want to make you feel like that's a very capable machine. You'll be happy with that.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Yay!
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. All right, Charisse. Take care. You too.
Bye bye.
Well, hey! How are you today, Leo Laporte? Here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We got smartwatches. We got. Augmented reality, 8888 Ask Leo. We got Mac Minis, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, and I'd love to hear from you. If you're outside that area, you could still call. We got a lot of international listeners. About 30% of our audience is outside the U.S. You can use Skype or something like that, Skype out to call the number, and it should be free because it's a toll-free number. Dennis in, how do you say that, Ruck, Oregon, is that right?
Roush,
Oregon. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Leo. You've been keeping my, you were keeping it going, my Windows 98 SE.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's an old timer. Wow.
I have a problem with, I don't use that anymore. It gave up the ghost about 10 years ago.
Oh, but, good thing, too, because it's far from secure these days.
I know. I have a problem. I want to take some macro pictures of some gems and diamonds and so on and so forth. And I'd like to get as good a crystal clear picture as I can get with a point and shoot, because I have a Nikon a D 3300, and I found out after I bought it that you have to buy a macro lens for it, and that's around $500.
Oh, man.
And so I'm thinking, well, you know, some of these point-and-shoots, there might be one out there that can get down to macro, and you can actually see the facets inside of a diamond. Maybe that's too much to ask of a point-and-shoot, but I figured the only person in the world that would know is you.
Is that what you do? You take pictures of the facets of diamonds?
Well, I want to get it that clear. It shows up when you're putting them for sale, if you can see the overall stone and how it, glitters and such. It's very appealing, and it makes people pay more attention than if you just have a blurry picture.
You bet.
So
there are many, many, many good point-and-shoots that do macro photography. That is actually something point-and-shoots do quite well. The idea of a point-and-shoot is you have one lens that has zoom, you know, built in. Usually it's a motorized zoom. Uh-huh. And then there will often be a setting, a macro setting on the camera. And so, my first choice, let me just make sure, would be the Sony RX100 series. These are really good compact digital cameras. And one of the reasons I like it is it has a very high-quality sensor, a 1-inch sensor. Sometimes the point-and-shoot cameras have kind of small sensors, and a small sensor for macro photography is not going to give you the best results. But I just should check just to make sure. You know where I go to find this stuff out is I go to dpreview.com. Are you familiar with them?
No, but I can check.
They are a great camera review site. In fact, they have – another reason I want to send you there is they have a video. We just interviewed them about macro photography. They have a very good video they put out last month on macro shooting. And they used in that one a Panasonic Micro Four Thirds camera, the Lumix. But it's an interchangeable lens, but a relatively inexpensive interchangeable lens camera that I like quite a bit, the Lumix DMC GX8. Mm. So it's a mirrorless Micro Four Thirds camera, which is a slightly bigger sensor. And that's a great choice. But I would still go to DP Review and look at the reviews of other point. This isn't a point and shoot exactly. It's kind of intermediate between a pro interchangeable lens camera. It does have interchangeable lenses, but priced a little bit more close to the point and shoots. The Sony is not going to be cheap. It's one of the more expensive point and shoots, but it's a very good point and shoot. Sony does make less expensive versions than the RX100. They even sell, I think the current RX100 is Mark 6, but you'll see they'll even sell the older Mark 3, 4, and 5, which will save you quite a bit of money. I just want to check the macro photography. It's my favorite point and shoot camera, and at that price, it better be. It's a fairly expensive one.
How expensive is it?
Well, if you get the latest model, it's going to be over $1,000. That's probably more than you'd want to spend. But if
I've already got that into my Nikon.
Oh, well, you have your Nikon. Just get a good macro lens. Oh, you don't want to spend the $1,000 on the macro lens. I get it.
It's $500, but I already spent, and they.
I understand. You could probably get a Mark III or IV for a lot less. Let me see if they're still selling it. It's one of the nice things about these Sonys. When they put out the new ones, they still sell the old ones for some time. Looks like $600 thereabouts for a Mark III, which is still a very good point and shoot.
Well, they have a Nikkor lens, 85mm macro f3.5. Now, I can get... I don't know if I can mention their name or not, but
sure.
Amazon carries the. They have where they've been like new, but they aren't, and you can get one for around $350, maybe $400.
Now we have a pro photographer in the chat room, Anthony Tortoriello. He's a really good photographer. He says he's not crazy about the Sonys. For macro. He says the macro kind of stinks on the Sony RX. Believe me, Leo. But he is pointing to a website called photoworkout.com where they review the best macro photography cameras for 2018. And surprisingly, they recommend a camera that I use. I wouldn't have thought of. It's a very inexpensive camera. I really like the Olympus TG5. I carry it around. It's my waterproof tough camera. So it goes underwater and stuff. And they say this has a very good macro. And I can vouch for that. I've done some good macro shots. It has a minimum distance of 10 centimeters in normal mode, but you can get down to 1 centimeter in macro mode, which is pretty darn close to that diamond. I bet you could get the facets in there.
Well, believe it or not, I have an Olympus Commedia D360.
Oh, my goodness. That's my first digital camera, practically.
Yeah, 1.3 megapixels.
I love that old camera.
And it still takes good pictures, but...
Yeah, they're only 1 megapixel, though. That's the problem.
I used to take pictures of, you know, pretty good pictures, but I used to have it set up on a tripod, then go through a magnifier with light.
Right.
A magnifying glass.
Right.
And believe it or not, you could get down pretty good, but Jesus...
That's as old as that Windows 98 SE computer you were talking about earlier.
Yeah,
I would take a look. I have to say, if this photoworkout.com, best macro photography camera, their number one pick, this Olympus TG5, is really a great point and shoot. I carry it around because it's, as I said, you can use it underwater. It's dust proof. $379, and it does. I know it does a great macro. I've used it for macro. I bet you if they like it, that's enough for me.
Okay, Olympus TG5.
The TG5. Yeah, I've recommended these for years as waterproof cameras, as tough dustproof cameras. Who knew? They're also really good for point and shoot anyway. A really good macro. And I find the image quality very high, very good out of these. It's very crisp. The lens is fast. It's f2.0. Macro photography, I should explain, he kind of did when he said you want to be able to see inside the diamond, to see the facets inside the diamond. The best definition of macro photography is 1:1. That if you're taking a picture of a flower, it's the size of the flower in the image. If you're taking a picture of an ant, it's the size of the ant in the image. It's kind of magnified, basically. It's a lot of fun, macro photography, especially nature macro photography. So we'll put links to Atort Aloha's picture recommendation, his macro recommendation from that website, Photo Workout, at our website, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Chat room, by the way, I've mentioned it a couple of times. Let me tell you, it's at irc.twit.tv. You can go on in there if you're listening live. A lot more of your calls right after this. The Tech Guy Podcast today brought to you by On Deck. I know this story so well. And if you're in a small business, this comes up all the time. You got to make payroll, but you're waiting for a big check to come in. You know it's going to come in next week, but you need to pay your employees today. Or maybe, you know, it's the holidays. You're staffing up. You got to get a lot of stuff on the shelves. You got to buy a lot of stock. That means a lot of money out the door, and you don't get paid till January. What do you do? Well, you could put it on your credit card and pay ridiculous interest, or you could go to On Deck. On Deck is 100% committed to small business owners with fast, easy, tailored financing. It's fast. You can get funding in as fast as 24 hours. They offer term loans up to $500,000, from $5,000 to $500,000, lines of credit up to $100,000. And I love this, none of which require business collateral. And they won't impact your personal credit. The application process is simple. You can do it online if you want at ondeck.com/techguy or by phone. There's a phone number at the website there. You'll get approved literally in minutes. They're very quick. On Deck is A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. You don't have to worry. They have some of the best customer service, U.S.-based loan specialists. And they've been doing this a long time. They've lent over $10 billion to over 80,000 small business owners. And with a 9.8 out of 10 rating on Trustpilot, you know they're good. Hey, I'm telling you they're good. These guys can get you through the slow spots and keep your business growing, running at full speed. It's the secure financing service that business owners everywhere can truly rely on. And I love it that they have a simple, secure web platform so you can see where you're, you know, how your loan's going, access to your account anytime, anywhere. If you're a small business owner and you need access to capital, it happens. You know, this is what, this is how it is. This is how you keep the business growing. Go to ondeck.com/techguy right now. By the way, because you're listening to this show, I have arranged to set up a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. No sell, no hard sell. They'll just tell you, they'll give you the rate, they give you the term, give you all the information you need. They can even approve you right there and then. Online or by phone, get approved in minutes at ondeck.com/techguy and get your free consultation too. OnDeck, O-N-D-E-C-K, like all hands on deck, like that. ondeck.com/techguy. And we thank OnDeck for their support and for helping small business owners like me keep going. It's worth it. It's fun, but it's the worst thing in the world when you get, you know, you see payday coming. You go, you know, you got to, the sad thing is, your customers can slow pay you, but you can't slow pay your employees. You got to pay them. OnDeck makes it possible. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Greg in Mission Viejo, California is next. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. My question is, well, a little background. I've been using Quicken since the 90s just to keep track of my tax-related things, and then I use TurboTax to prepare my taxes at the end of the year. And I have a Windows laptop that I use exclusively for that. Otherwise, I'm a Mac guy. I'm tired of the, or I'm not a fan of the subscription service that Quicken has gone to, and I'm wondering if you can recommend anything comparable that would be Mac related.
I was a big Quicken fan for many, many years. They still offer Quicken for the Mac, but it isn't technically a subscription. I guess it is. It's just that they even before they were doing it as a yearly fee, and it's only $35 a year. It's not hugely expensive. But even before they were doing it as a yearly fee, they would do yearly upgrades that you would have to buy. So in a way, it's probably better that they admit, all right, it's a subscription.
I'm using the 2014 version now, and I don't think that TurboTax is going to allow me to import from that.
Yeah, that's how they get you, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you don't need to upgrade. It's not like a checkbook program has changed in the last 40 years.
Exactly.
So I don't know how Intuit kind of justifies the fact that you have to subscribe, but that's their business model. They are doing a Black Friday sale right now, 30% off. So this might be a good time to buy a couple of years. I stopped using Quicken. I was a big fan. In fact, in the early days of personal computing, that really was one of the big things you did is checkbook management. But I started using a free service offered by Intuit, same company, called Mint. And I think some of this is that they want you to move to Mint. Mint's an app. So the way that Quicken worked is that you would download information from your bank. And depending on the bank and the interface, it would be more or less automatic. In my case, it was almost always I had to download a QIF file and import it. And it was a real pain in the butt. Is it fairly automatic now?
TurboTax is, yeah.
But I mean, how do you get your data into Quicken? You just download it, or do you?
I do it manually, and categorize everything manually. And I've been doing it so long that it's pretty automatic as far as, you know, the payee or whatever will normally always be.
Yeah.
Same category.
I guess, by the way, I guess Intuit sold Quicken or spun it off. So technically it's its own company. Although I bet you anything Intuit still has a fairly big chunk of, I think they're still somewhat of an owner. In any event, if you really want to manually enter it, I guess there are other choices, not a lot of them. Remember, Quicken put Microsoft Money out of business by being so dominant. So there are not a lot of and I choices anymore. And I think part of that also is that most people, I can't imagine a young person saying, oh, yeah, I want to enter in every transaction by hand. So most people now use something like Mint, which does it automatically. You hook it up to your bank. You hook it up to your credit cards, and it automatically imports everything. It does a fairly good job of auto-categorization. If you really want to spend time fiddling with it, you can go through and make sure that everything's right. But then it does. But in my opinion, it's done a very good job. It kind of knows, you know, when you buy something at Shell, it's gas and auto. And when you buy something at Target, it's, you know, sundries. So it kind of does a fairly good job. It gives you the budget information. It really depends what you use Quicken for. But I think a lot of the features of Quicken are duplicated in Mint. And Mint does it automatically. So you don't spend all that time, data entry time, each month putting the stuff in. If you want to use something that is more manual, there are a couple of programs out there. There's one that is basically shareware. Called Money Manager EX. It's open source. It's cross-platform. It's, I think, designed for refugees from Quicken. It even supports the QIF, Quicken Interchange format, so you can import your data in. You might take a look at it. At least it's free to try, and it runs on Windows, Mac, Linux. It's kind of the default for people who really miss Quicken. and don't want to buy Quicken anymore. So this one's free, open source. They ask for donations. You might want to.
Yeah.
So it's available on Windows 32 and 64, Mac OS, Linux. You can actually put it on Android too. So that would be kind of handy. You can have the information on your phone as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mint, that's cloud-based, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a website, basically. They do have apps, but yeah, all the data is kept in the cloud. It's run by the same people who created Quicken, Intuit, and they use for their back end. Sometimes I think people, I know when I first started using Mint, I had a little reluctance because they said, well, okay, give us the login to your bank account. And I went, wait a minute. But when they first started, they used the same back end the banks used, so that, you know, Yodlee, which knew all that information anyway. Now I think they do it in-house or they use, but I think they keep it fairly secure, certainly as secure as your bank does. I think some people might say, well, I just don't want to give up my personal information. And for them, there's things like that Money EX app. Or Quicken. I mean, I mean, $30 a year is not the worst amount of money ever.
Yeah. I know the Quicken on the Mac had a bad reputation for a long time.
Oh, it did. It was terrible, and I think they've overcome that.
Okay.
So Intuit's, I think, gave up on Quicken, and in 2016, they sold it to a private equity fund. And I think they've done a good job of kind of updating it. And, you know, I would take a look at Quicken for the Mac. You do really want to go to a more modern version, I think, if only for connectivity to your tax program. Anybody got any advice, though? Let us know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Anybody got any advice? If anybody has any advice... Scooter X says Quicken on the Mac is now on a par with Quicken for Windows and is well supported. So the new owners are doing a good job. IGG Software makes something called Banktivity. We'll put these in the show notes so people can try them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask. Leo, hope you had a great Thanksgiving. We're entering the holiday shopping frenzy. If you've got a great deal you want to share with people, something you are looking for, give us a ring. 8888 Ask Leo. Clyde in Torrance, California. Hello, Clyde. Hello, Clyde.
Hello, Clyde. Clyde.
I think Clyde fell asleep. Sometimes that happens. You know, once we had a call... And I literally picked up and somebody was snoring. I won't mention who it is, but she knows who she is. Ruben, British Columbia, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. I phoned yesterday. I had a question about landscape photography and whatever. And so I have a Chromebook. I was wanting to do some editing, photo editing on it, but I can't use Adobe Photoshop or Lightroom on it.
No, not yet, although I honestly believe that Adobe is moving in that direction. They're making iOS apps. They're going to make Photoshop available, full Photoshop available on iOS next year, so I wouldn't be surprised. Have you played with the Google Photos? That's, you know, just kind of part of the Google ecosystem. Does that give you enough editing capability?
I've been usually, like, right now, I've been usually doing my editing on my phone just with Google Snapseed.
I love Snapseed, by the way. And a Chromebook, most modern Chromebooks, you can put Snapseed on there. They support Android in the Google Play Store. So,
what the thing about my Chromebook, it's the Acer R11.
Oh, so it's older.
It doesn't support the Play Store. So.
Well, there's one I would try that is a Chrome extension, but you can also use it on Windows and Mac and Linux even. It's called Polar, and I think it's very impressive. Polar.co. Polar.co. Okay. They have a Chrome extension that I think is quite good. They're also working on a video editor, which is impressive. I use, a lot of times, I'll just use Google Photos. They have quite a, and they keep adding more to that, quite a good set of stuff. As you say, Snapseed on Android and iOS is an amazing photo editor, but it's very filter focused. If you want to do more of what Lightroom does, so we ran out of time yesterday. You were asking about landscape and portrait. Are you just getting into photography? Is this something new for you?
This September, I started a project in school. Just for photography, and so I'm totally loving it. It's one of my favorite things I've done in school, and so
that's awesome.
I want to go more with it, and I want to do it for just a hobby type thing.
Yeah, it's hard to make a living, and I know we have many professional photographers in the audience, and they'll, I'm sure, agree. It is, unfortunately, tough to make a living these days in photography because there's so many photographers. Everybody nowadays with their camera phone is a photographer, but it's a wonderful hobby. So I would never discourage anybody from learning and picking up a camera, getting better equipment, playing with software and learning photography because it's a very satisfying hobby, and it's been great for me. I love it. If it makes you feel good, man, that's awesome.
I've been using my dad's Nikon D70 for a while.
Great camera. My first DSLR. Yeah.
So yeah, it's been good. I've been mainly looking, trying to find something photo editing. So.
Yeah. Try Polar on a Chromebook on the R11. It should be fine. It is free to try. I think that you can also pay, but you should check and see what you get if you pay. I don't know if you get a whole lot more. But that's a pretty good thing. I have to say, though, on your smartphone and with that Nikon, you can easily transfer. I don't know if the D70, that's a fairly old one. On more modern cameras these days, you can easily transfer stuff over to mobile devices via Wi-Fi.
I've been using, because I have a Google Pixel XL, I use that.
And you can transfer files from the D70?
I use the transfer tool that you use to transfer your data from each device. But when you get the Google Pixel, I've been using that to transfer the files from my D70 to...
Perfect.
My phone.
So the one issue of that is you're probably getting JPEGs, not RAW. Now, the D70 will shoot.
It's actually coming out RAW.
They are. Oh, that's fantastic. So now, I mean, you might say to you, I bet you that that Pixel has more oomph, more horsepower than that Chromebook. And I know it's a smaller screen, but it's a very good screen. It might be that that's a better photo editing device than a laptop, than a Chromebook.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Really, if you think about it, as long as you can see it well enough, and you're young, so your eyes are probably good enough, you can see it. Which Pixel do you have?
I have the first generation. Okay. So, yeah.
That's an LCD screen. It's a pretty good screen. I wouldn't hesitate. And there are so many good apps for photo editing. Here's the thing, and this will help you. Initially, and this is really, I think you can use blame Instagram for this. People, when they first start doing photography, especially if they're on Facebook or Instagram or, you know, one of the social sites, will start using those filters. And one of the things that made Instagram so successful is you could take a average photo, apply a simple filter, and it would look great. And people got all excited about this. And certainly that's a legitimate thing to do, but it's really a shortcut that you're going to want to end up getting more into what, and I think that's your instinct, what you can do. You can, in fact, you know, these simple point and apply photo filters aren't really using your artistic sense. So eventually you're going to want to go beyond that. Snapseed starts with those as well, because that's an easy way for somebody to get into it. You load a picture, you apply a filter, you're done. But Snapseed, as you start to get more sophisticated, notice you'll be able to do more detailed things. You'll be able to look at layers. You'll be able to start modifying things like clarity and vibrance and saturation on your own. You can even dial down the filters, combine filters, and that's when the artistic expression really starts. Ultimately, though, you are probably going to want to do it on a laptop, because with programs like Lightroom, you can do regional corrections. You can say, you know, this is a great photo, but the face, that guy's face is too dark. You can, with Lightroom, you could pick that face and brighten it up a little bit and save a lot of photos. So the problem with filters is it's applied to the entire photo. As you get more sophisticated, you're going to want to do regional corrections and stuff. Polar will start you in that direction. But ultimately, I think the thing to hold out for, and I believe it's coming, is a more powerful version of Photoshop and Lightroom for Chrome OS and or Android and iOS. That will make a very big difference.
Cool. Do you have any, just a little bit more time? I have one more question.
Sure.
Okay, so it might have been last week. You were talking about putting your photos on Flickr and whatever.
Yeah.
And so I've been putting my photos on Instagram and stuff like that. And so I recently installed Flickr and just looked at it. And it wasn't like, to me, it wasn't that amusing for me. But yeah, I was just wondering if you have any more apps or something like that that I could maybe start putting my pictures on.
Yeah, I certainly would look at Flickr. It's free, although a pro account's not very expensive. And the thing about Flickr is you get fairly serious photography buffs commenting on your photos. And I really like the feedback. And they give thoughtful, clever, useful feedback. It's like being in class and the students are giving you notes. Another good one for that is 500px. Either one of those, but my favorite right now, especially since Smug Mug bought them, is going to be Flickr. It's free to join, flickr.com. Put 1,000 photos up there for free and get comments from colleagues. That's great. I want to strongly encourage you to keep up the good work. I think I'm sorry I ran out of time last time, but I'm glad I could talk to you a little bit more. This is a very good thing for you to pursue, I think. I'm glad you're doing it. Are you in high school, Ruben?
I'm in middle school.
Middle school.
In my classes, we're doing this thing called 20%. And so basically, it's based off of Google.
Yeah.
They did 20% of their day was,
So you can make 20% of your day be photography.
Yeah. So
that's a good school. I like that.
So yeah, it's been really fun. I love it.
You're gonna even if you don't become a professional, and it is a hard row to hoe if you become a professional. You know, it's true of anything. I loved music. I thought, I'll become a DJ, and I'll get to play music all day. And it ruined music for me because they tell you what to play. You become a photographer, you end up shooting a lot of weddings. It'll ruin photography for you. So keep it as a hobby. You know, it's a great hobby because you get to shoot what you want when you want. Really think about it. Make it art. Use Flickr to share it. That's a really good idea. Better than Instagram, frankly. Instagram is a social site. Flickr is a photography site. There's a big difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And 500px is very good. I'm not sure what's going on with them. But if they're still going strong, 500px is another place. A lot of pros. I find it, frankly, intimidating because the images on 500px are so good. But a lot of pros are there. Flickr is a little less intimidating. And join a few groups of photography that you're interested in, and people will comment and give you feedback. And that's a very, I think, very helpful. And it just feels good when you get a photo you really like and you post it on there and people start favoriting it. It really is encouraging. Somebody's mentioning Unsplash, unsplash.com. I think the kids maybe more like Unsplash a little bit better. What's the one that DeviantArt, the kids go to? That may, has some adult content on there as well, but DeviantArt is an online gallery that's also a lot of artists, painters, and so forth. They have photographers as well. DeviantArt.com. It's a little sexier. Mom and Dad may be a little unhappy if you spend too much time there. But it's good stuff. I think they've really done a good job. There's some really talented people on there, too. I'd say Flickr is probably the best.
Okay. I'll give Flickr a second try.
Yeah, I think it's getting better.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Keep up the good work. Good luck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, rocking and rolling. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. I love talking to young people, like our last caller. He's in middle school, and he's discovered photography. What a great, great hobby. You know, and you know me, I love to talk about it. Let's try Clyde again. I think we woke Clyde up. Hi, Clyde.
Hi, yeah. Yeah, Leo, my wife has a 3-year-old iPad.
Yes.
Started flipping back and forth. And she talked to a person at an event that's supposed to know about computers. And he suggested removing the cover because it's got that magnetic shutoff.
No, that I don't. That, well, I mean, no. Was the cover designed for it?
No, it's an off-brand, but yeah. It's off. We have nothing. Well, what happens, it works fine, and after an hour or two, I think it's the heat is doing something to it.
Well, when you say flipping, what's going on?
It'll go to another screen that she's had open, back and forth, right when she's trying to take a picture or send a message. So, very irritating. So, she's ready for a new one, but...
How old is the iPad?
2 years.
And did she put iOS 12 on it?
I don't think it's updated.
Because one thing that's changed with iOS 12 on the iPad, and it's a big deal.
Hold on, let me talk to her.
I've updated everything
you're supposed
to. What's
that?
I've updated everything.
She's updated it.
Yeah. You know. So I think maybe what she's running into is a new, and I'm putting this in air quotes, feature of iOS 12. They've changed the interface a little bit. And you can, if you swipe along the bottom, just with your finger, swipe along the bottom, you'll go to the previous app you were in. So you should try that a little bit. Swipe along the bottom, and suddenly you're in the previous app and the previous app. And I think some of it, it's possible that what happened when she went to iOS 12 is she didn't realize these new UI features, these new user interface features, and it's biting her. Because I'd hate to think it's only 3 years old. That iPad should be working just fine. So try that now. I can tell she's listening. Just swipe along the bottom and see. Does it do the same thing?
What do you mean swipe along the bottom?
So take your finger and run along the bottom of the screen on the iPad. This is a new feature. iOS, because they started this on the iPhone 10, and they changed the whole user interface on iOS, and they've slowly been migrating this to the new iPads or to the new iOS 12, and even an older iPad is going to start to operate differently. And you, I know you have the home button, and if you double press the home button, it'll show the previous things. But I'm pretty sure on these older iPads, they also have this swipe your finger just all along the bottom edge of the screen, and it should, like a carousel, move to the next.
No,
good. No, doesn't do that. All right. Well, maybe it may be that I, you know, I haven't experienced this on an older iPad. I don't know if they were smart enough to say, "Oh, this one has a home button. We don't need to add the new features." But that's my concern, is that maybe there's something going on in the newer interface that's doing this. I've never heard of an iPad switching to a different application. That doesn't. I don't know if that indicates anything wrong with the iPad. It sounds more like there's maybe some button or something being pressed by accident. So,
like the user doesn't know how to use it.
Okay, I wasn't going to say that.
Hey, she learned. It took her 6 months to learn Windows 8, but it took her weeks to learn this.
Oh, yeah, iPad is great. Let me tell you, everybody should just start using this thing. It's a much easier way to compute. It's safe. It's secure. Here's what I would suggest, Clyde. Find the nearest Apple store. There's one not too far from you.
That's right.
And go on in there. You might want to make an appointment, or you can look on their calendar. If you go to the website and look at your local Apple store, look at their calendar, and they'll have classes. But I think even if you go on in there and you describe this, and she shows the Apple people there, they'll give you some tips. They're very good. They used to, and I wish they had kept this up. They used to have a wonderful thing called one-on-one training, and I would send people there and say, look, just go to the Apple store. It was free. If you buy an iPad, you get one-on-one training, even if you bought it 3 years ago, and it's a great way to learn how to use it. So I would just suggest going into the Apple store with it, say, show them what happens, see if they can give you some tips, and you know, if it is something wrong with the iPad, they maybe can help you fix it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We bought it at Costco.
Doesn't matter. Apple is going to support it wherever you got it.
Well, that's good. I was going to call their concierge service.
No, go with Apple. But do make an appointment with the Genius. Yeah. You can do that online. That way you won't spend a lot of time waiting, because Apple stores, especially this time of year, are jam-packed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're crazy. But I have to say, this is one of the reasons it's worth paying a little more for Apple gear. Apple is, there's no one comes close to support like Apple does.
That's great.
Yeah. And so you can show them what's going on, and they can tell you if it's user error or.
When I use it, it's sort of okay, but then as the day goes on, it gets worse and by.
Well, and so your diagnosis says heat might be true.
It's getting really hot.
Yeah, it shouldn't get hot. So that could be true. And while a three-year-old iMac or Apple iPad is no longer under warranty,
yeah.
They may have some suggestions for you. And if not, well, you're at the Apple store. You might want to take a look at one of them fine new iPads. They start now at $300.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And well, if you like it, if you're getting good use out of it.
Oh, I like it.
Another
one if this one doesn't work.
Yeah. Clyde, what's your wife's name?
Yeah, well, in the meantime, my iPad 2 is working.
Oh, you
very
need
well.
A new one, Clyde. That's a really old one.
Hey, listen, it's very smart. My granddaughter took it through engineering school.
Oh, that's awesome.
She started making the big bucks. She gave it to grandma.
Oh, isn't that nice? Clyde, what's your wife's name? I want to.
That's Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, it's been a pleasure. You are in luck. You've got a great iPad and a great husband, and you're just going to, I think, a great chance to go to the Apple store and see what's new.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I have to tell you, I do appreciate your program. You're probably the only tech program I would ever listen to.
Oh, bless you, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
I really appreciate it. It's nice to meet you both. Thank you. I think the iPad, my mom has a MacBook, an iMac. I gave her my MacBook last year. She has an iMac. She has an iPad. And she just uses the iPad. She's 85. She loves the iPad. It does everything she wants. We do FaceTime calls. She's able to, she gets knitting patterns on there. She's able to surf the net. She just loves it. Does her email on it, her texting. She has an iPhone too. Actually, she's asking me, it's time for a new iPhone. I think she has an iPhone 6. The problem is, she uses the headphone jack, and no new iPhone has a headphone jack. In fact, the new iPads don't even have a headphone jack. Darn you, Apple.
But mom is going to get a new iPad for Christmas. That's for sure. Maybe she'll get a new iPhone too. If I can just figure out what to do about the headphone jack. Mike, Spokane Valley, Washington. I think our last call of the day. Hi, Mike.
Well, hi there, Leo. It's a pleasure to speak with
you. Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Well, let's talk about the new Mac Mini.
So I love the new Mac Mini. I'm very excited about it. I was very relieved. I thought Apple was abandoning the Macintosh platform. Instead, they come out with a great Mac Mini.
Well, I told my wife prior to the release, I said, this is the things I want on it. And they almost got it done.
Oh, what'd they miss?
The graphics.
Yeah, okay, hang on, because I have to take a break, but I want to come back and talk to you a little bit about it. There is a solution. It's called the eGPU. It's not a cheap solution, but it is a solution, and I think this is why Apple did put kind of anemic graphics in the new Mac Mini. Thanks to Big Pee Wee for the music. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for the phones. Thanks to you for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. So you're right. It's a, you know, Intel motherboard graphics, which is kind of a bummer, Mike. I think it's adequate for day-to-day use, but did you want to use it for video editing or 3D rendering, that kind of thing?
Well, not necessarily. I guess I may have gotten a little spoiled on the old, on the trash can Mac Pro because I was running.
Oh, yeah, that had a Radeon in it. Yeah, yeah.
And I actually got the lower end, what is it, the D5.
This order. Mini will be faster. I would say go.
Got it.
Oh, you got it. Oh, yeah, it's a lot faster.
I went all the way out. I mean, I maxed it out. But I was so disappointed with the...
What feels slow to you?
On my displays, just when I open a browser or something, it just takes a little longer. And I'm a little bit familiar with what you're talking about, I think, on the eGPU. And here's what I did. I actually returned it, and I thought maybe I'd purchase another one, but maybe bang it down a few bucks on the cost and go that way, like with that Black Magic.
I would not actually get the Black Magic. It's nice, but it's not upgradable. And it's silent. It's kind of like a dock, so it's great for the Mac Mini because you can dock it to, you know, all the stuff you need. But there are other eGPU enclosures that are upgradable. They're little. Right. They're not as quiet because they have fans in them, but they are openable, and you can put something else in it. I have the Blackmagic eGPU, and I love it, but I think the fact that it's not upgradable means that it's a lot of money, you know, $700 for something that you're not going to, you know, in a few years is not going to be, well, of course, if you've used the trash can for a while, maybe a few years isn't a big deal for you. But there's the Razer, the one I would look at, and we played with it a little bit, is the Razer Core X. It's not very expensive, and as a result, you can put start with a whatever you can afford graphics card, and then if you get more money or you want more speed, put a bigger one in there. Unlike the Blackmagic, it's upgradable.
And it's like space. Somewhere in that price range, do you think, with the Razer Core X?
Let me see what the... let me go see what the price is on this Razer Core X on Amazon. It's $300. You could buy a $100 Radeon, put it in there, and you'd get much better for performance. So for $400. So yes, get a cheaper Mac Mini.
you know, get down to, I bought the $1,299 model, but you can go down to $799, and yes, that would pay for the eGPU. And if that's what you feel is missing, the thing is, the connectors in the back are all the same, no matter what model. It's really right. It's really the CPU and RAM and storage. And because you have this Thunderbolt 3 on the back, that one would go to the eGPU, but another one could go to a very fast external hard drive that'd be faster than the one in the Mac Mini.
So that's, all you think I'd need is like a Radeon.
Yeah, you can get an inexpensive Radeon put in there. It would be much better, frankly, than the one in your Mac Pro.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't. You can use NVIDIA cards with it, but the Apple doesn't have the drivers, so you'd be better off, you know, when you get it, get the card that's for Apple, so it'd be the right driver in that.
Well, this helps me out considerably because I was going to mock that up today and try to get the order in.
Yeah, we were very impressed with the Core X. $299.
Okay.
Minus card, obviously, but you can choose the card you want.
Great. Well, I appreciate that, and
take a look at I know one that I know works with the Mac is the RX 580, the Radeon RX 580. I'm not sure how much that is, but that's one I know works. I think that's the one we were using. And it's fast. It's nice.
All right. I will do so.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
My wife and I are going to come down your way hopefully in a couple months.
Oh, I'd love to see you.
Studio.
Fantastic.
We were going to come back when you were on vacation, but turns out we had some health issues, so
We
weren't able to anyway. Now everything's good now.
So good.
Great talking to you.
Remind me when you come in, Mike. Say, I was Mike. We talked about the eGPU, and I'll remember.
I'm the older guy that acts young. Young people.
Can't wait to meet you. Have a good one, Mike.
Thanks so much,
all right.
Leo.
Take care.